Oh, Dr. Mill.
Thank you, Tony.
I'd like to call this meeting to order, please. This is the regular board meeting of the Kenya TOISD Board of Trustees. It is April the 17th, 6:10 p.m. And Tony, would you kindly call roll?
Mrs. Casares?
Here.
Mr. Coronado?
Mr. Coronado called and said he would be late.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Searle?
Here. I think we have, I see Art Gallegos in our audience tonight. Art, could you do the pledge to the flag for us?
Sure.
Thank you, sir. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I pledge allegiance to the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Thank you very much. Mr. Rodriguez, would you like to read the mission statement this evening for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The mission statement of Gunnelkee Independent School District is that we will provide a quality education to assure that all students graduate on time, are prepared for higher education, or are workforce ready.
Thank you. Tony?
Board honors, Mr. Ramirez.
Board President Searle, board members, Dr. Murphy, could you please join me down here on the steps to start our program tonight? We are feeling blue in Count TOISD. No, it's not because we're sad. It's because we are excited that blue is the color of autism awareness, and April is autism awareness month. You may have noticed this month's decorations in the boardroom and the hallways as well here in central office. They represent the puzzle logo of autism awareness and the blue ribbon that comes with it. And while every facility in CISD has gone above and beyond to show solidarity with those students living with autism, there's one case in particular that makes us extra proud of it. Tyler Mason Maldonado Bloodwood, a Damian Elementary student who is autistic, received the 2012 Yes I Can Award from the Council for Exceptional Children this past weekend in Denver, Colorado. The award is given. Yeah. The award is given to students with disabilities who have excelled in academics, athletics, advocacy, or the arts. Normally, this award recognizes older students in their teens who have spent years learning how to cope and manage. At just 8 years old, Tyler is by far the youngest recipient of the award this year. Tyler received the award for showing tremendous gains in his academic attainment and social development. Before arriving in Canfield 2 years ago, Tyler had trouble focusing, communicating with others, and using his fine motor skills. With the help of dedicated parents, teachers, aides, and an occupational therapist, Tyler has made tremendous gains. He has relied less and less on the help of a teacher's aide, and has recently made the move to a general classroom from a general education classroom to a special education classroom. He's working more independently, and he's engaging more with other students as well. Moreover, Tyler has made improvements in his reading, and he is now reading above grade level.
Wow.
It's no wonder then that Tyler is the recipient of this year's 2012 I Can Award. Yes, I Can Award. Could Tyler Maldonado Blawood and his family please come up and receive a certificate and greet the school board, please?
Special eye for those types of things. So they were noticing a lot of things that typical adults would not notice, and they were giving him some extra time to be able to use eye contact and let us make corrections for him. So they were really impressed with Tyler. I'm always impressed with Tyler, so I hope that you are impressed with
Absolutely.
Tyler.
This
impacts Canisteo Independent School District because we started out when we came in very first IEP meeting. I was talking to Sandy and Janine and Ms. Harrod, and I was like, the kiddo cannot read. What we was doing was memorizing those words instead of using sounding out words, using the ED and ING. You'd have to memorize each word as a word, as an ED word, as an ING word. And they used a computerized program, which I think you guys approved, FLIRT, and that's what sped it up. All we needed was that little bit of an extra boost. So a lot of times those things that you guys are signing off on are making a huge impact inside the classroom. The collaboration between the CISD staff and the school and myself, because I'm always in there, you know that, don't you, Dr. Murphy? Mr. K, can you stand up for 1 second? This is Tyler's teacher, Mr. This is Tyler's seventh teacher, because we're a military family, we move around a lot. Mr. K is the only teacher that we have had that is able to work in a non-confrontational way. He doesn't say, well, because Tyler has autism, he is always pushing Tyler to do better and better and better. No matter what he's doing, he's always trying to raise the bar for him. And so I want you to know, from me, a parent, that that guy is doing an excellent job. And also, Miss Lulu, if you could stand up real quick, they see you. In case you guys didn't know, she's worth her weight in gold. Honest to God. There's no briefs, no schooling, no nothing that can replace what she knows as a parent. And is able to take that information, she also has a child that's on the spectrum, and she can take that information and find new and innovative ways to help inside of the classroom. So, and then I have to say, Sandy and Janine, they have done a great job. I've popped in at random times asking some for really random things. Sandy and I had a conversation one time, and she said, you know, you do ask a lot of us. At the same time, you never ask us for something that's unreasonable. And I do think that all parents should strive for that, but I think that you guys should, you know, try to help us with that a little bit. And then, of course, Dr. Murphy, I've been in his office a time or two, and I'm not sure he's always happy to see me, but he's always been open and welcoming to me and tries to find the best way to get things done in an efficient manner, and I appreciate that. And I also have to say, last thing, when we moved here from Kansas, we picked JDE. We shopped for JDE, we like the stats for JDE, so, and JDE is doing great things. So I hope with this new era, you guys can do some great things. Please don't forget about special education, because the things that they're doing are great. A lot of times you don't see it, but obviously, that's an international award that Tyler received. So, thank you very much.
Congratulations to Tyler and his family, and it's worth noting that Tyler is going to be the subject of Estela's Lessons with us this week.
Oh, right!
And he's also be in the front page of the paper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no other way to describe the Canisteo High School Theater Arts Troupe than to use the word dominance. The proof of that fact is the fact that the players, led by theater teacher Richard Jeffrey, have won the district 248 one-act play UIL championship 14 times in the last 17 years. If I had to use another word other than dominance, it would have to be dynasty. Year in and year out, the students of Canisteo High School spend countless hours in the auditorium piecing together excellent works of drama, and every year the judges notice. Actors, technical crews, light technicians, and other students, they all came together this year to put together a play called I Remember Mama, which told the story of an immigrant family at the turn of the century. For their work, individual students also received praise, besides being named the best in District 248, actor Armando Ortiz was deemed the best actor, while Jasmine Talavera, Ashby Graves, and Corey Friday were named to the all-star cast. In the technical side of the house, Victor Maldonado was named best light tech. He, along with Selena Guzman, Gloria Rodriguez, Jorge Mena, and Randy Brown, were named the best tech crew. To the CHS stage players, come up and greet the board.
Thank you. stage left or stage right over here? Stage left. Enter stage left. You're supposed to exit stage left. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. There you go, Mr. Jeffries.
That's what we're all here for. Thank you, parents and teachers and staff, for coming this evening. Tony, that takes us to...
Superintendent's comments.
President Searles. I'm sorry.
President Searles, board members, audience, thank you so much. Two items very quickly. I just want to share with you that we are planning our third annual summer shutdown schedule, where our campuses will be shut down over a two-week period. We are going to have some modifications this year to assist us in our bond projects. Basically, the regulation is going to be that bond projects take precedence over the summer shutdown. So as needed, they will be open. But other than that, we will have the same type of shutdown schedule, which has saved us hundreds of thousands of dollars already over the 2 years that we have. We look forward to that. And I really want to appreciate Martha Aguirre and Vivi Maldonado, who have put together a large piece of that along with Pam Fierro regarding this shutdown. So thank you, staff.
Dr. Murphy, could I interject?
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to say Mr. Coronado has joined us during the recognitions. Thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Murphy. Excuse me.
The second thing, thank you, board, for letting me go to the Fast Growth School Coalition Legislative Conference last week in Austin, Thursday and Friday. I had a wonderful time. I apologize, as I said, in Friday about the short notice that I was amiss in the longer notice, but thank you anyway. About 50 to 60 superintendents in districts from East Texas all the way out here that have fast-growing communities, where they are some of the biggest players in the state regarding well-known districts. I sat next to our superintendent of the year, John Folks, from Northside for about 3 hours on Friday morning, had some really great interactions. And, you know, one thing I learned is that, you know, you don't really think about it, but when the legislature cuts money from school district budgets, the schools that and the districts that have faster growth get hurt even more because they can't keep up with the enrollment. And that point was hammered home again and again and again. So we look forward to continuing to participate in that coalition. It's a fantastic group. And also lobbying the legislature as they come back into session next year regarding not only funding for all school districts, but specifically for districts that are experiencing a large amount of growth as we have and are about to continue to have.
Mm-hmm. So there is hope?
Well, there certainly is a voice there. You do have some of the most powerful superintendents and school district in the state, and there certainly is a great lobby. We definitely want to stay members of that Fast Growth Coalition.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank
Murphy.
You.
Tony, that takes us to open forum.
There is no one signed up for open forum today.
Okay.
Item 5A is the 2012-13 budget update. Mrs. Sandini.
This is the latest and greatest. She tweaked it a bit over the weekend. Not much has changed, but she did get some new numbers that are even more encouraging than they were last week.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy.
Oh, Title I program. There is a breakdown It gives you the enrollment, and then the second column provides you the percentage of economically disadvantaged, and then the per pupil allocation, $56 versus $61. And again, this is just informational. This is not part of the budget you will hear about. On this slide, we've got the state compensatory education budget, which is part of the budget you will be adopting. And under this allocation that we give to the campuses, we determine our at-risk population. We take that number and we give $250 per student. And so basically this is a breakdown by campus, and it's a total of $875,000 that is allocated out of the state compensatory funds. This, of course, is for our at-risk population, and there are 10 components or criteria that we look at to ensure that the students are at risk. Any questions so far?
I think it's interesting that the SD budget per campus is bigger than title. You always hear title. Mm-hmm. Right. You don't hear SCE as much, and it's actually more.
Well, with the title budget or the Title I program, we also fund several salaries, personnel. And so the, you know, once we carve out the personnel and other areas, that's how we end up with this.
Because again, it's interesting to me that Garcia Elementary seems to lead the way in at-risk children. Am I seeing? But out of, looks like it's second place?
Yes, the at-risk enrollment right now appears to be the second highest. Okay. And again, it's not only, there's the criteria, there's various criteria, and so it's based on that. It's that qualified okay. test scores are one. If a student has been retained, is another. For the older students, if it's a student that's a parent, that's another. There's several criteria okay. that is involved.
And so that is truly correct?
Yes, that okay. is. It's these students are taken from the PEENS information that we report to TEA.
Thank you.
Okay, this next slide is a high school allotment. And so we obviously give a higher allotment to two high schools, and it's a $75 per student at the high school level and then $20 per student at the middle school level. In high school allotment, the funds for out of that program are supposed to promote college readiness and provide the assistance needed at the high school level. And the allotment there is $200,000. On this slide, we have the allocations that were given to the campuses. Now, keep in mind the dollar amounts here on the proposed budget include salaries. And so you can see that the number is fairly high. It includes the high school allotment. It includes the state comp ed funds. So all of the funds are the allotments are included in here. I would like to mention that if you notice, there's a considerable increase from the 2011-12 budget to the 2012-13 budget. And the main reason for that high increase is that, if you will remember, we adopted the budget 1 week, and the funds for the compensation package that hadn't been adopted were put in a district-wide account. Once the compensation package was adopted the following week, I went ahead and put them into the different campuses. And so that is why you can see, and you'll see on the next slide, where there's a huge decrease in the district-wide account. Under the proposed budget allocations by department, if you will go to the very last one, the district-wide one, there's a $2 million difference, which is actually where we put the funds after the raise. The compensation package was approved by the board. We went ahead and allocated it to the different campuses. But without knowing what compensation package was going to be adopted, I didn't know how much to put in each campus. And so that's why that was done that way. At the next presentation, as we finalize these allocations, I will give you more detail as to why one increased more than the other in the different departments and campuses as teachers are approved or things of that sort. On this slide, we've got a proposed budget by class object. If you'll notice, the first column there, we've got class objects of 6,100, 62, 63. just for your information, the $6,100 is for salaries and benefits. And so you'll notice that that's always our biggest allocation, because that is our biggest expense at the district and pretty much at any organization. Salaries is where it is. The funds need to be allocated. Under $6,200, which is contracted services, we have a total of $3.9 million there. We've got $6,300 of general supplies. We have $4.5 million. That was a slight increase from last year's budget. Under $6,400, which is other operating expenditures, we have things such as registration fees, conference fees, field trips, bus transportation fees, all those fees that are allocated into that account and that object code. We've got a 1.5 allocation there. And then under the 6,600s, we've got the capital outlay and improvement. That's a $583,000. Because we do have the bond funds, that is where primary funds are expended as far as capital outlay. Right now we're looking at our budget of $49,330,000. This slide hasn't changed from what was presented at the March 28th board meeting. We're looking at our preliminary property valuations of $1.5 billion, which equals an $18 million in property values or property taxes for district revenue. Again, that's taking the property valuations divided by $100 per home value and multiply it by the $1.17 rate. And then we calculated a 98% collection rate because that's, you know, that's what we normally have. We actually have a better success rate, but we conservatively keep it at the 98%. This is our proposed property tax rate for the 2012-13 school year, with a maintenance and operations tax rate of $1.17 and our interest in sinking our debt service of $2.25.
Through the chair. Martha, can you go back a slide? Talk about that number right there.
Awesome.
The valuation?
Plus 9%. Did you mention
it? No, I just mentioned that it was the same as it was presented at the last board meeting, but it was an increase of 9% from our last year's valuations.
And President, I learned at the fast growth that that's the best growth of all. Mm-hmm. This current year, we don't have a large student growth, but we have a 9% property tax growth.
It's fabulous.
And that's the way you want to be. You don't want to be backwards the other way. We have increasing students and declining values. We're definitely in the right direction.
If I might. The best way to have is to have both at a certain level, because of the formula. If our property values grow more than our student population growth, then we'll see they'll be taking away money. And so that's where we actually sort of Socorro's population growth as well as their valuations are growing at a good pace compared to ours. So they're getting more money from the state than we are. It's kind of a complicated.
Ms. Aguirre, did you go forth with the appraisal value of the quarry?
Yes, thank you. We do have some information that I will be sharing.
Okay.
On this slide is the revenue estimates. This slide has changed from the March 28th presentation from Friday's printout that I provided. Under the local sources, and I'm going to look at the middle column, which is the 2013 estimated, we've got $19,619,000 of local revenue that we're expecting or projecting. And this is basically mainly our property value, our property taxes, and then additional other local sources. Under state sources, we're at $27.8 million in state revenue, in addition to a couple of other state revenue that we've received. And that is where we found a slightly higher increase than what we presented at the Friday meeting. I did have school resources provide the latest and the ABA, our ABA numbers, to update and see how we were as far as our projections. When I entered it into the summary of finances, the calculations brought forth more funds. Under federal sources, we remain the same at $3.9 million. And so our total revenues right now is $51.3 million for our budget. And again, I just, a disclaimer, this isn't the final. As we move forward and we do property valuations and final numbers, the number may be changed. But at this point, as of today, that is the latest and the greatest. On this slide is our projected revenue less expenditures. As I mentioned earlier, our estimated revenues are at $51.3 million. Our preliminary budget or estimated expenditures right now are at $49.3. Now, let me remind you that number did increase because between the March 28th presentation and this presentation, we did, through the needs assessment, allow additional FTEs, I believe to the tune of about 11 positions. That obviously increased our expenditures. However, at this point right now, the revenue less expenditures is reading at $2 million. Under this slide, the budget priorities, what I've done is, this is the same slide you saw on Friday in the previous presentation. However, this one has red checks. And the reason I put red checks is that I've already included allocations for these expenditures within the budget. So the $2 million that you are seeing is has already considered these things.
So what have we done? What have you put in there for technological upgrades? Because one of the concerns is, well, if we give a competitive compensation package, are we going to have enough money for technology? I've actually heard that comment. What have you done?
Under the local budget, we do have $200,000 allocated, and then through the Title I and the state comp ed funds, we will allocate additional technology.
How much?
Funding for technology.
As well as, I know that I've read and had feedback that, well, we may get the equipment, but you know, it's not much good if you don't know how to use it. Is it running hand in glove that you get the equipment, now you're going to learn how to use it, and there's money to do both?
Under the staff development priority that I've got there, with the Title II funds and the Title I funds, we will be using those funds, that funding, for the training of the staff in the different programs and areas that we implement.
But you feel that it will work hand in glove, that...
Yes, I know that through curriculum and instruction and school resources, they are working closely as to what they're purchasing and what needs are as far as the training that will be needed to provide effective use of the equipment we purchase.
And Dr. Murphy, maybe, you know, I don't know the proper course to take to check with that, but through the deck, through all the priorities that we read, that was something that was significant.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
If you could kind of keep up with that.
Yes, ma'am. But we have DAC members in the audience. By far, just to let the audience know, we surveyed the DAC, the leadership team, which is about 80 leadership members strong between DAC and leadership. And this is pretty much the order that they fell out. Certainly 1-2 was the compensation package, certainly number one by far, and technology being strong number two.
But make sure that we don't just get the materials, you know, everybody is going to have, you know, well, we got $5 to buy stuff, but we only have a dollar to train everybody with. Let them match, please.
And one of our goals for next year certainly has an upgrade in technology staff development.
Great. I would also like to see field trips somewhere added in there for the children.
Yes, it's already there.
Upgrade?
Yes, ma'am.
Increase?
It's one of the 28.
Okay.
Yeah, strong.
Yes,
strong
Mr.
Trip.
Rodriguez.
Just real quick, Martha, was our previous allotted money that we had on the fiscal year, the previous fiscal year, 2011, 2012?
For technology?
Whether it's federal and the local side. The local side? Well, we're looking more at the local side because that's where we had.
The technology through the local side, we came out at about $350,000. And the plan was that we wouldn't do this in increments the next couple of years as far as allocating funds to improve the technology.
So we were at 350 last year, and what are we at this year?
This current year. Last year, we were working through the technology allotment and whatever campuses allocated out of their budget. So officially, it was whatever campus, each campus allocated, and then the technology allotment. Since then, we no longer have the technology allotment, and so we're making up the difference.
And how much are we looking at from the federal side? What was it called?
E-rate?
No, not the E-rate, the funding that the part of the stimulus. Last
ARA.
Our funding was the last.
ARA.
And so there's nothing of that, but the other funding that we get from the
Title I would be the only source, and what we're doing is putting in a proposal to TEA when we submit our application, because every year we have to apply. And so we provide the initiatives, and then based on TEA's approval, we get the funding, and then we move forward. But I don't have the exact number, but I can get that information as far as how much was allocated.
That's all I have for right now. I'd like to see that increase, but we could discuss that.
Okay. Please continue, Ms. Segeda.
This is a little hard to read, I'm sorry. This is basically the budget adoption timeline. We presented on today, April 17th, we presented the budget projections as well as preliminary values and the allocations that each campus and department makes. On May 15th, we will be providing an additional presentation. And again, as we get nearer, we have more definite numbers. And hopefully, we'll be approving a compensation package as well. Then June 7th, we'll be publishing the notice as required, and hopefully adopting the budget on June 19th. In the event that we don't adopt on June 19th, I'm going to do a second publish on June 14th so that we have June 26th as our last and final opportunity.
And Morgan, you'll remember we did that last year too. Did we utilize the second date last year?
Yes.
Actually we didn't, because we adopted the compensation package on the last presentation.
We adopted the budget and then compensation.
And then, yeah.
But we did use that last date, so just know we got that double whammy right there, the 19th and then the 26th, unless we can get it all done on the 19th.
That's all I have for tonight, unless you have questions.
I just have an incredible, I can't tell you how wonderful it feels to be sitting here this year. Not doing this or pulling our hair out or just feeling like miserable wretches that we're not going to make it. And this year, we're going to see, I think, in just a few minutes how well we're going to make it. And that feels really good. I'm sure it does to the rest of the board, too. And thank you, Ms. Segeda. Very nice presentation. I appreciate it.
And I just wanted to mention, because I did mention at the committee meeting that the comptroller's leadership circle was up. I need to go ahead and submit again. And so are we all in agreement that you want me to go forward with a silver award?
I feel happy with that.
I would say up, but whatever the majority vote.
I think it's because it's the checkbooks.
Is that part of the budget
issue?
No, it doesn't. It's not. It's just we're overdue. We need to get going on the submission of the request. So I just need some guidance.
Does the board want to give any guidance or want to talk about it more?
The difference is that we go with the gold, the check register must be posted on the website. Everything else will meet flying stars.
You mean the actual award list?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Do you want to take it? I mean, that's kind of shocking, and it really isn't on the agenda,
yeah.
So I think we'd be better if we took it up maybe at next month's meeting and we could give you a clear answer.
There's no super deadline on that. They'll take our stuff.
Okay.
He's been calling me.
Thank you, Ms. Segeda. Were there any other questions?
Board, could we get direction that if the person who's calling says, look, I got no now, then just move forward with what we currently have? But if we can wait, bring it back to committee?
I'm fine with
that. What I can do is ask him if we can upgrade it once the board decides.
Okay.
Okay. Everybody fine with? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Segeda. Any other questions about the budget? Hearing none. Tony, that takes us to the moment we've all been waiting for.
Item 5B is the 2012-13 compensation package presentation to include discussion and possible action.
Poor Lundy.
Just before we start, do we have any type of comparison to this 4 years? Hello, Ms. Kadena.
Hi.
It's been a while.
Been a while.
Do we have a comparison of to this this current year?
As far as market information?
Well, like on some of, I was looking at some of it, and it just gives us what the proposal is, and not necessarily the what the current.
Okay, we'll go ahead and go through the presentation,
yeah.
And then at the end we can entertain questions.
Sorry about that.
Let's get us going. Good evening, Board President Searles, board members, and Dr. Murphy.
We're going to walk through the presentation. You've got two pieces of two packets with you. One is going to be the slides that we're going to cover tonight, and then the other is a little bit more detailed information that can take them with the. This is the slides that he's showing you. And the other that has a nice cover page that looks like this mm-hmm. is just a packet of information that has more detail in it that we're going to go into tonight for your information.
Thank you.
So we're here this evening to provide you an update on our compensation plan. I want you to know that the information we're presenting tonight is in draft format, and we're here for discussion and guidance from the board. As far as the information that we're presenting this evening. In the Friday packet I sent a memo that outlines three potential models of compensation that were provided to you. The information, the cost estimates were provided. I'm hoping that I followed the board's directive in providing some competitive compensation options for the board. And Luz Cadena and Ann Patton from CASB are here this evening to guide us through some of the presentation on compensation. And I'll turn it over to Ann and Luz.
So thank you again, Board President Searles, board member, and Dr. Murphy. Thank you for having us back here again tonight. We will begin with a presentation, and Ann Patton, who is a senior compensation consultant, will be assisting me with the presentation. She has worked with me on this project. We're going to begin briefly. We're just going to cover pay system objectives, basically the goals, and these are one to pay for job value based on the market price of the job and based on the skill sets and the job duties of the job. We also want to be able to recruit by having competitive starting salaries. And then we want to be able to retain good employees by providing or creating a systemic way of providing general pay increases, and then managing costs by creating a system that allows the board to manage those costs based on the business budget, okay? The next page identifies the market group. We touched briefly on this at the last presentation. We are looking at the local ESE 19 region here. So we have that group of districts. And then we have, at the board's request, we also have two groups, which are the suburban setting, similar size group of districts, and then we have the similar size and demographic districts. These are 16 districts that you identified. One district, Roma ISD, did not participate. And also, Fabens ISD and the local ESC 19 did not participate in the CASB salary survey. So there's going to be limited market information from these two districts in our group.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
President, board members, one of the things that we noticed in going through this is there's a huge difference when you look statewide at urban districts versus suburban districts versus non-suburban districts. There are a lot of districts out there that are similar size to us, even similar demographics, but they're rural. Or not at all connected to an urban area. And then there's similar sized districts to us demographic wise that are suburban urban. And you're going to see that when they're rural, we don't really at all compete or we're just talking apples and oranges. It's only when you look across the state, when you start looking at districts that are similar size demographic wise as well, that are suburban or urban, that we really start to see some more comparisons. But I also can tell you, and the board asked us to look statewide, that even though we did look statewide, it became very apparent early on that the most important group to look at was our local competitors here in El Paso. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy.
slide, oh, before we move, thank you. Before we move forward with the other slide, we also used other sources to use our private sector data from surveys that we purchased and jobs that we looked at were primarily non-jobs that transfer easily between district jobs and non-district jobs, as custodians, technology, food service employees. So that was the type of jobs that we also obtained non-district private sector data.
Yeah, that's the only way we have to collect data from the private sector. They are not subject to open records. They will not tell us, so we purchase these surveys to provide us that.
Bless you.
We're going to touch on the understanding market data briefly. Again, we just want to make sure that there's not an emotional overreaction to market when we see that. It may be very appropriate for jobs to be paid above market if they are, if the incumbent is highly experienced, has been with the district for a very long time, or if the incumbent is in a position that has a very highly skilled or unique set of skills. And so it may be very appropriate that that market comparison is above market. Again, anything that's above 100% is considered to be above market. At market is the comparison at 100%. And then you're going to have some jobs that may be below market. And it may be very appropriate for the market comparison to be below, and that is because the individual may be brand new to that job. So overall, we look at trends. And that's just to keep in mind as we look at market information. In your packet that you have, you do have market information for all the job groups that were included in this pay study. We're looking at your teacher market, and the comparison here is primarily with the local area. As Dr. Murphy mentioned, as we looked at market comparisons, using the kind of video 15 as we were referring to it, and the local area, it became pretty apparent that the market and the area that you're competing with is this area here, ESC 19. The district starting teacher pay is 3% below market. The district is next to the lowest paying district, and I do apologize, our little arrow here kind of moved, shifted on its own.
It slowed down. Thank you. The line should actually go between San Elizario and Tornillo.
So again, the district's starting teacher pay next to the lowest paying district of this group, and you can see the breakdown of the median. So you have Isleta and Socorro and paying above the median, and then at your 75th percentile breakdown, we have Clint ISD and Fabens with Fabens at 47,000 being the top paying district in the area. Okay.
Does this surprise anybody?
Yes.
Are you really surprised?
Totally.
Second lowest starting pay in El Paso County, only ahead of Tornillo.
Yeah, and this is your hiring schedule compared to their hiring schedule. Bachelor degree teacher, 187th day. So this is apples to apples.
So the district is low to the market. As you go through year 15, you can see overall low market comparison. When we take a look at how the district compares to the county of 15, these are your district's large metro areas. Primarily those that are paying above the median are primarily your Dallas, Houston, San Antonio area. They pay higher salaries. The competition is very keen in those areas, very similar to what you encounter here in the El Paso area, because you have teachers that can easily move to other districts just because of the proximity of the districts in the area here.
And there it really shows the urban versus the rural.
Yeah.
And Canyatillo is becoming much more suburban, and we're really starting to get in and getting lumped in with these other suburban type districts locally and across the state.
Yeah, and I will tell you that from working with several of the districts on this list, that they look locally, they look regionally, right in their geographic area. Competition is very keen. Sometimes in that Dallas area or Houston area, there's not just a few percentage points difference between the lowest paying and the highest paying. And then, of course, it gets wildly different when you go to some of the more rural districts. If you look in the Valley, if you go to East Texas or down the Gulf Coast, those salaries are very, very different.
I drove through Mount Pleasant over Christmas vacation. I tell you, it's kind of like El Paso. I mean, it's 300 miles from nowhere. It's a great little town, but you know, it doesn't compete with other areas because there is nothing else around it.
The next graph is the district's pay at each five-year interval. That the blue columns is the district pay, and the solid green line is the median of the local ESE 19 pay for teacher pay. And then the orange line, that represents the median of the Canutillo 15 teacher market median at each one of those five-year intervals. So you can see that overall the district, again, is more competitive to the Canutillo 15 districts, but frankly, those are not the districts that the district needs to be competing with for talent. Next slide, we're looking at your stipend and incentive comparisons. Overall, the district is fairly competitive to ESE 19. We're not recommending any increases to your current stipends and incentives because we are recommending a teacher model that is going to be fairly competitive. And so we'd rather place the district's financial resources with your teacher pay and increase teacher pay, and then we can look at these later based on district needs.
All these stipends always, and well, actually any kind of stipend needs to be looked at, particularly when they apply to teachers, to what the teacher salary schedule is being paid is at. So if you, a lot of these school districts, if you were to only look at stipends, if they're a low-paying school district, they may be having to pay higher stipends to attract some talent. And some of the detail data clearly illustrates that. We would rather have you spend your money on more of the teachers than the spot stipends.
And these are teacher
stipends. These are teachers.
Critical shortage area
teacher stipends. This is not the extra duties. This is teachers.
And it's not the special ed professional. You know, the speech therapist and those types of
things. No. These are teacher shortage stipends.
We're looking here at your teacher experience, and what this is a snapshot of your current teacher workforce and the year and their years of experience. And what the arrow at the 50% is showing us is that primarily 50% of your teachers have 9 years of experience or less. Then we have 50% of teachers that have more than 9 years of experience. But what this is indicating is that there's either been some growth in the area, you have a lot of newer teachers, and so when we take a look at the cost recommendation for the teacher model that we are presenting, there is going to be a cost associated with that because this is where your largest numbers of teachers are, and so at these years, that is where your teacher schedule is the lowest to market, and so the biggest cost is associated with this.
So as we want to increase the teacher salary schedule, the more we want to increase the teacher salary schedule, the more it's going to cost since you have heavy concentration in 8 years or less. So that's where we need to make targeted salaries. You also have a fairly mature workforce at the other end. We see this big spike at the other end. Approximately 14% of your teachers have 25 years or more of experience. So those folks will, in the next few years, be retiring and ending their employment. You're not going to be replacing those 25-year teachers with more 25-year teachers because they're also leaving the profession as well and retiring. They're usually, your hiring practice is typical of the other school districts in the state where you're hiring most of your teachers with 8 years or less of experience. That's when teachers in their career are more mobile.
And we looked at your experience, we looked actually at your hiring pattern for the past 3 years, and as Ann mentioned, your hiring pattern has been
typically at the most 10-year.
Yeah, it was 76 or 77% were hired with less than 8 years. And that is very typical. I see the same pattern from Frisco to East Chambers. That's just how school districts hire.
So what we have here is the model of the 4.5% general pay increase and the starting teacher pay at $46,000. And the way you want to take a look at this is reading it from left to right. You have a zero-year teacher, current Canutillo ISD teacher at 0 years, making $42,175. The recommended pay increase is a 4.5% general pay increase. That would equate to a $2,250 increase. And then in addition to that, we have additional adjustments to alleviate some compression as we increase that starting salary and also ensure that as you hire a two-year teacher to the district, new to the district, your current teacher going to 2 years is not paid less than what that new teacher coming in would be paid.
Yeah, that's a disaster.
Right, and board, you guys specifically directed us to take care of those adjustments so that the five-year teacher, you know, in this, you know, mm-hmm. was feathered out in a similar way as the two-year teacher, as the 10-year teacher.
And so, although it's not illustrated in this slide, we did make adjustments up to year 22. You do have a teacher model in your packet. We're looking at the market comparisons for all of the other job families or job groups. Overall, the trend here, you can see the low market comparison for each one of these job groups. Now, within the overall comparison, there will be some jobs that are going to be paid above market and some jobs that are going to be paid much lower to market based on this overall comparison. But the trend here is overall as a group, the jobs are paid below market at the percentage comparisons listed here.
I want to bring your attention to instructional support, administrative support, and auxiliary, where the non-ESC 19, MUSI, and NA, we did not look at the school districts that were not in the ES Region 19 for jobs that we know you're only going to recruit locally.
So the recommendations that we have are to increase your starting teacher salary to $46,000. That will provide the district a fairly competitive starting teacher pay. We do know that many districts will be providing pay increases for the 12-13 school year. We have been working with several districts and we have been modeling pay increases from
around 3%, some a little bit higher depending on where they are. Some have already announced, some in the Houston area have already announced 3% or $1,600 to each one of their teachers. So districts are providing increases this year, and I've been running a variety of different models for the other districts that we've worked with.
And in my dealings with my peers, I can tell you that our local districts are all poised to give raises this year.
You know, some school districts have gone one, maybe 2 years without giving pay increases, and so there's a lot of pressure right now on them to feel, they're feeling like they need to retain their staff. Mm-hmm. Employees only go so long without a pay increase, and then, you know, they have bills to pay or wherever, and they may need to leave the district in order to go someplace where they can, you know, get rewarded and, you know, make a little bit more money. And if their salaries stay stagnant, then they come get forced into looking around. So I think, you know, I think that's why the school districts are looking at, are asking for pay increase models from us.
And President Board, the concern that I have as your superintendent is, you know, this 4.5, you know, that's a significant raise.
Bless you.
But we are second to last. We are second to last in Region 19. So with all the other districts poised to give a raise, if we cut back on our raise, they're going to move up, and we're not going to get ahead. And we see this as an opportunity to really make a little hay and catch up a bit.
Right, and to build on your point, Dr. Murphy, remember this data is 11-12 data. It is not 12-13. So, you know, even though you're kind of low right now, we know, looking at those numbers now, we know some of those numbers are going to be shifting up.
We're also recommending moving the counselors. Currently, the counselors are paid on a separate counselor schedule. We are placing those on the administrative professional schedule and moving them from staff schedule into a pay range that provides the district more flexibility.
With your other professionals.
And we also have updated job classification and pay structures. You do have those in the packet. And so if you can view those at this time, but we do have 5 new or adjusted job classification and pay plans.
There was not a lot of reclassifications being done. We did not do all the questionnaires and all of that. That was not necessary. It's very disruptive to the workforce. So we did not do lots of job reclassification. We looked at your job classification hierarchy. We fine-tuned it. If the market wasn't appropriate, then we might move it. But there's not a lot of change in what you see now for what you
The other, and I do want to make a comment here when she's talking about the 5 different structures that we have or classifications. In the past, we had the 1 pay scale for the clerical and paraprofessional. It was a combined scale. Now, what we've done is it's separate. You've got administrative support and instructional support. They're 2 totally different, brand new pay scales for those groups that have been separated.
And we did that because you have 2 separate markets and 2 basically separate career paths for these groups. And so we're able to align the pay plan to the market values based on their unique paths. So that's why we created those. Separated them. We also, and this is something that we were able to do, is provided equity adjustments. We modeled the same equity adjustments in the same criteria, which is the job experience, employee's job experience, up to 15 years to midpoint. So the equity adjustments were modeled for all employees from administrative professional to auxiliary employees. And that helped move pay through the pay range, and we're going to illustrate how that.
So it wasn't just on a teacher pay scale, it was on all employees, including auxiliary work, custodians, maintenance, all through. You've done that all the way through?
Yes, all the way through. We provided a general pay increase, and then after the general pay increase, if that was not enough, then we provided them an additional equity adjustment to move them farther and let their pay progress farther towards that market target based on their experience in the job. And Roscoe's staff did a wonderful job of providing us that information. That's not something that they are usually collective, so they went back and checked everybody's and made sure that the data was correct so that we had valid data to make adjustments. So thank you very much.
So we just have here some general recommendations, and primarily the recommendation here, and this is going to be some direction and guidance from the board. As far as those employees that are paid above the maximum, we do have a few that will be affected, and there's various different options here. One of them is that no pay increase is provided to this group of employees who are paid above the maximum, since they already are paid above the market rate, significantly above what the market value for that job is. Something else, another option would be to provide a one-time amount.
Just a lump sum, like everybody above the maximum of the pay grade would get maybe, anyway, I'm just gonna make up a number for like $500 or some flat amount. Many districts, because of financial situations, they're just gonna freeze pay. Their pay is above the maximum. If anyone's pay is above the maximum, they just don't get any money, which actually funnels focuses more money back on the folks that are below.
And this is talking about the auxiliary staff,
this
not
is everybody.
Everybody.
I would look. This is everybody.
Okay.
I mean, there are you have very few.
We have less than a dozen.
Yeah. So I'm not. This is not a huge impact for you, but I just wanted to provide you some options about what to do with some of those folks, and also caution you to make sure that how whatever you decide, it needs to be consistent across all the job families. Don't be picking and choosing who gets what for whatever. Your role as the board is to decide what is the job, how much of a pay increase are we able to financially give, and then let the system distribute the salary adjustments. And then for those above the maximum of the pay rate, everybody would be treated exactly the same. If you don't do that, you run into potential grievances and discrimination issues and all kinds of ugly HR things that you really don't want to have to deal with. So just be sure that you're consistent and objective and as systematic as possible when we start making salary adjustments.
So the district has done really good about providing general pay increases off the midpoint, and so we recommend the district continue to do that practice, and of course within the district's budget limitations. And also we are working to in reviewing and updating the compensation policies and procedures. That is something that we will be working with Ms. Carrasco as we move forward and finalize this to make sure that they are meeting the district's goals and strategies.
Okay, are you ready for this? The next slide is the cost. It is very difficult to see, but it should be on your handout. The cost of the 4.5% general pay increase and the associated equity adjustments to the teachers and to everybody else is $1.97 million, and that includes everybody who you currently have salary for. That included folks. That include vacancies or benefits or increased retirement or any of that kind of stuff. It's just base salary adjustments.
So we're looking at about a 6.1%, I think, increase to your current budget. And so again, Ann mentioned no overtime. This is just base pay.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, we also ran a couple of other options for you, as mentioned, that Ms. Crossville mentioned earlier. And we can run various scenarios. But for illustration purposes tonight, we went ahead and illustrated the 4.5%, which would be the optimal for you, and moved the farthest towards getting where you want to go as far as market competitive pay.
So how does the 4.5% and all of the equity adjustments help the district employees? What we're going to see here is what we refer to as our scattergram, and what you have here on the first slide is the proposed pay structure for your auxiliary group of employees and where they are with current pay. Okay, so current pay compared to the proposed structure. What we're going to see on the next slide.
So I just want to bring your attention so you can see, remember, this is one of the areas as a job family that was one of the lowest compared to market, and that's clearly illustrated because you've got lots of folks who's paid, all those little dots and stars and boxes is individual pay.
Let me try, if I may, President. The stair step in the middle of these boxes is the median. So the target, like we saw earlier. We are currently, the vast majority of our, and this is auxiliary,
yes.
So that would be maintenance, custodian, bus drivers.
Service, bus drivers, skilled bus
drivers. The large majority are almost all are below the mean, but then notice the ones that are even below the bottom. They're not even in the range. Look how many people, each dot is a person. They're not even in the range in there. So with a 4.5, you can notice in the next slide what happens. Notice that they all come into the range on that last slide. But also notice that we're not going crazy. We're not bumping a whole bunch of people over to me. We're just getting everyone into the range. The concern is if we do a pay raise less than the optimal amount, we're still going to have individuals out of the range. This is what gets them in. That's why we call it optimal.
Right. The market is not going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's always going to continue to move. So. I always caution boards on, well, sometimes it comes up, well, maybe we just do so much this year and then so much next year. I always hesitate to offer that as an option because, quite frankly, sometimes next year never comes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you as a board have promised one thing to the employees, and then something happens, and then you're not able for one reason or another able to follow through on that. And so it's very risky to do that. I really prefer that if you, you know, to do as much as you possibly can. And these do additional equity adjustments spreads people's payout and it targets the pay towards the folks who are below the market. Anybody whose pay is already above the midpoint, they just got the general pay increase. Mm-hmm. So they got something, they just didn't get additional equity because they're already above the market.
Any questions?
Can we go back a slide? I just noticed something I'd like to point out, President. The reason this stair steps is these are different levels. Level one all the way up, what is it, level nine? So up here, these are our like senior people. This would be like, well, I won't even say names, but these are our senior people. Notice with the 4.5, we are still not at the mean. So even with the 4.5, we are vulnerable to lose some of our most senior valuable people because they're being paid below the mean, even at a 4.5% increase. And that isn't just auxiliary. That goes, you'll see that throughout the entire pay structure.
And ladies, would those people then be brought up through the one-time adjustment that you were talking about?
Their pay right now is suppressed. This is the before.
Uh-huh.
This particular slide, see, their pay is down there at the bottom. And the jobs are arranged in hierarchy based on the skill, effort, responsibility of the position. So those in the highest pay grade have the most responsibility. So they're kind of lower in the pay structure. And then after the 4.5, and then considering how long they've been in the job, see that they move up.
But notice they don't even make it to the market.
But they're not quite at the market target yet. That's probably is a combination of the 4.5 and then how much experience they have in that job. So,
and on your increase to the budget, would those people be brought up to level, the one time brought up that you were speaking of, or they would just...
They'd be brought up to right there.
They'll be brought up to right there. Now, not okay. Everybody's going to be, you know, we did not just... catapult everybody's salary up the market because, as we talked about earlier, that would be inappropriate. People new in the job or should be below the market level, and somebody that's more experienced in the job should be at or are much closer to that market target. So we systematically looked at how long they've been in that job, and then we actually mathematically spread their pay based on experience in the job between the minimum and the midpoint of the range. We used 15 years. So it's like if you've been in the job for 15 years, we figure you should be making market target. That's somewhat of an arbitrary number. Everybody would love to do, if you've been in the job 10 years, you would be making market target. We can certainly do that calculation. It's extremely expensive. So that's why we did the 15 years, because it's more, you know, it's just a more reasonable cost. So we did both a 4.5% general pay increase. Plus, if that wasn't enough to get them where they should go, based on their experience in the job, they received an additional equity adjustment.
And was there any real, is it market to move the counselors up away from the teachers, the nurses, the librarians?
We put them in a pay range that was market competitive for them, and they are in the professionals with the other professionals like diagnosticians and LSSPs and some of the other ones.
But how could you move them and not move the nurses?
Actually, they had their own pay scale.
Okay.
They were on their own pay scale.
They weren't with the teachers. They had a separate, you just had one little pay grade to scale out there all by its own.
That was stuff. Counselor?
That was just counselors.
Oh, very, okay. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, we just eliminated that with
and moved
the counselors
them up
with the other professionals and then kept the nurses.
Okay, thank you. I understand.
That's a traditional, you know, nurses. Traditionally have been paid like teachers. I mean, there's some districts that are considering moving them. But for right now, that's just kind of
okay.
A traditional way with nurses and librarians. Usually teachers, nurses, and librarians are grouped together into a salary structure.
My understanding was the counselors were always in that group, too.
Yeah, they had their own little,
okay.
separate thing. So okay. we just eliminated.
Thank you for clarifying.
Okay.
And other questions? Yes, Rachel?
On page 7, on the total staff and the staff affected, there's 10 people that are already on strike. That's where it shows them.
Those are the 10 people that we were...
What classifications they fall under.
Those are the people whose individual pay falls above the maximum of even the the adjusted higher structure, so the pay is still high. So, for example, if you were to look at those, you would see little dots above the maximums.
So, in auxiliary, we have none.
Yes, that's correct. So, auxiliary is not one of them. But there's 10 people out of a poly population like that.
So, the district has maintained, the pay practices have been maintained very well over time.
Thank you, Ms. Grosco.
Exactly, but it's just low. But the structures were low, and the pay is low.
Okay.
And on those 10 points, it is where
the
decision on behalf of the board of what to do with whether to freeze or to give a one-time payment for them. And so that would be also something that we would need direction from the board.
Would you be able to give us information as to what it is they do and what their job entails? How long they've been here?
They could, but I'm going to caution you again about making individual pay decisions, and we want to avoid any kind of risk of favoritism, of discrimination, of causing grievances. You know, I would just strongly recommend that you just decide as a board, at a very high level, what to do with those folks and to apply it across the board and not look at individuals.
Yes, sir.
Honestly, I mean, you get between people and their pay, and some of the nicest people in the world get really, really sensitive about that. So I'm just cautioning you about that.
Mr. Rodriguez,
I wanted to see which ones those were, not necessarily the single.
Yeah, I'm not singling anybody out, and I know nobody here would either. It's just so that we can get a clearer picture as to what's going on.
They're throughout the pain.
Yeah, I saw that they come from three different.
Yeah, three different areas.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Just real quick, I'm trying to look at, and I'm looking at the more detailed kind of. Comparison plan update. Just looking at, let's say, even 7 and 8. 7 or 8.
Page
7 or 8 of the comparison plan update.
Right.
Page 7.
Yeah. Going after the teacher skills. I'm trying to get my further interpretation of the study. When it says, the pay comparison is what we're currently paying, correct?
What you're currently paying, it says, is in the column that says CISD salary.
Okay, that's what we're currently paying?
That's what you're currently paying. For multiple incumbents, we have average salaries.
Okay, and the pay comparison is what where we're at in the market.
Right, where it says the district salary compared to ESC 19 market. You can see that's where that comparison is made, and then the next column over, it says the district salary compared to the non-ESC 19 market. See how that is done, and then the last two columns where we've done is compared what your the midpoint of your range. Remember, we set the range is based, the middle of the range is based on what the market for those jobs is. So right now your structures were, you know, they kind of are up and down. They're actually in some areas they're fairly close, and some they're rather low.
And
so
my question is, where are we looking at from our current pay scale to our proposed pay scale when we're looking at the equity adjustments? Where are we looking at, and where is that comparison?
You mean actually from after you make an adjustment, then what does the comparison for each one of these jobs look like? Is that what you're asking?
Pretty much what I'm seeing is, okay, this is our current pay scale. And this is what we're looking at to adjust it. The proposed one under y'all's recommendations. And then looking at that difference, where is that?
We do not have a comparison of that because we do not know exactly. I mean, we could do a 4% or we could do a 3%. So we have not gone in and had, we do not provide an adjusted comparison for each one of these positions.
My question, what I'm trying to get at is if it's a, I guess your all's recommendation, first I want to look at the adjustments that needs to be made to make them at either whether we're looking at putting up 100% in the Region 19 market or even 100% in that midpoint. Where would we need to be at within the, if it's a 3.5?
Well, one thing is probably not appropriate that every job be benchmarked at, that every job be at 100% depending on the experience level of the incumbent. So, I'm not sure.
So we should compare it to the midpoint?
Right, we did two comparisons. First we look at what are you currently paying compared to the market? Is there a reason why jobs are high or low to the market? But more importantly, we look at trends. You know, like overall, how are you paying your jobs? And we've already discussed that. Then the next thing we look at is what does your pay structures look like and how do your pay structures compare to the market? So there's two activities that happen, which is why we've done this comparison. What's not on these pages and that we don't normally include in our comparison is after we make the adjustments, then what do these comparisons look like? So that analysis has not been done.
And that's going to be a moving target because as the other districts move another year, it's right. Going to be off again.
Right. I mean, we could do that, but you're not going to find every one of these at 100% of the market, nor would it be appropriate to push everything at 100%.
Well, what I'm looking at, I guess I'm trying to see is, okay, if we're below the market and we want to get up to the market, where would we be at? Do we want to get to the average or do we want to get to the top of the market? And what is that adjustment across the board? You have like the current salary, right? And you're saying we're at, okay, let's take for one example, we'll look at page 6, or let's go to 7. Look at 1, and then you look at the current salary, and then you have it at 81%. So we're at the 81 percentile, correct?
Okay.
And so we're below about 19%.
Yes.
Of the current market.
Yes.
And so my thing is, where's that recommendation to make those equity adjustments?
The recommendation to make the equity adjustments is in the cost estimates. So you can see on the cost estimate, it's the recommendation is not person by person. You're going to get the cost estimates are doing, you can see where it says the equity adjustments. So if you look in your packet, if you're on this screen here, the top part of this list, how much is it going to cost to do the general pay increase? And then the bottom, you can see where we've made recommendations and the number of employees who would get additional equity adjustments, some that would be brought to the minimum and some that would be given an additional adjustment based on their experience with the job.
So for that,
but it's not person by person.
So for that group of administrative professional employees, you're looking at 28. That cost estimate page of 22. So as a group, you're looking at 28 employees where equity adjustments were provided, and you've got the cost estimate there, close to $80,000.
So, and you can see on the auxiliary where you've got a lot of employees at a very considerable cost. Getting equity adjustments.
With your auxiliary group, as we illustrated.
And my thing is, I don't want to look at it person by person. I want to look at it market by market. What is our market compared to the other
after
market?
You make the adjustments, and that is not something we normally do, but we would have to come back.
And that's what my understanding was, is we were going to look at where we're going to compare ourselves to the market and how we get to that market, and then we could do across the board. That was my understanding.
For us to take a look at how you would compare to market, we would have to take a look at the recommendation that you would provide as far as whether it be the 4.5 or the 3.5, because to generate all those different models and then do comparisons of proposed pay increases to how the market is, we would need direction from the district as far as if we're going to go with a 4.5%. How would that comparison improve for the benchmark jobs that we currently
but
have?
That's the issue. Then we let's say we do a 3 or 4, whatever it is, and then it creates. I mean, the inequities stay there, and you know we have some people that are above the market. When you're looking at the local market by even 105%, 125%, we have some people below. My understanding was, let's look at ways where we can get the people that we need to in the market range, depending if it's the average or the top, depending on how much money we have, then we could look at across the board.
Now keep in mind that the equity adjustments are the adjustments that are providing that increase to pay within the new pay ranges that were created, that were aligned to market or aligned to market based on the midpoint or that target rate. So as we look at an employee and their job experience, it is their job experience that's going to determine whether they move further into that pay range and whether that market comparison becomes greater, because as we saw in that previous slide, if they're new to a job and the market if they're not at market or at that median or market target rate, that's very appropriate. So to move everybody to a 100% of market is not appropriate if they don't have that job experience to get them there. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things and correct me if I'm wrong, Luz, and one of the things that she explained as we were looking at this is that anybody below a 95% of market, those are where the adjustments are going to be, because you want to bring them up at least to that percentage. So anybody below that percent, those are the areas that indicated that needed to be targeted and looked at.
But yeah, the adjustments were not made to bring them up to 95%. It basically took a look at if the employee had 15 years or more and they were not being paid at the market rate, they should be paid at market rate, so that adjustment, that formula moved up into that pay range to that midpoint.
Yeah,
anybody that had more than 15 years only received the general pay.
But you're asking for a percentage, and then so that you could evaluate that, then that's where it becomes complicated.
Well, one thing that the reason we applied the general pay increase first instead of doing it the reverse way, mm-hmm. which you talked about, is there's not a market for every job. Doesn't exist. Not there. It's just not.
Then what?
That's why we apply a general pay increase. We look for benchmark jobs, jobs that are very consistent employer to employer. But there's just not enough data in this world that's going to have a market value for every single job in this district. We have for a lot of jobs in this district, but every job is not going to have a market. So we apply a general pay increase. Remember, we have a systematic way of providing regular pay increases for employees. We applied that criteria, and then if that was not enough, we gave an additional equity adjustment. We could run a model where we don't give anybody any general pay increase, and which would basically be that, and then we could see how much these equity adjustments are going to cost. It's going to go way, way up. So. That would be one scenario. We just run one where we don't do a general pay increase and see what the equity adjustments cost, and we can provide that to you fairly quickly.
I guess that's what my understanding was. We were going to look at the equity adjustments. From there, we would be able to decide, okay, we could give this. And it's pretty much on, you know, the other, not necessarily the teacher pay scale. I have some questions on that, but regarding everything else, I don't know what the rest of the board feels, so I'll just see if there's any other input on that. But just real quick on the teacher pay scale, I know we had you all here a couple of years ago, and looking at the first, I think it was the first 5 to 9 years that was a bit major concern, and looking at, you know, the differences from what we wanted to look at was across the board, and so it's not, you know, if you look at 0 years and we're at, you know, in the 7-8 and it's a 4-2-1-7-5, but if you go at another one, we're way below. So if you're looking at page one and you're looking at 0 years, okay, we're number, let's say we're number 8, right? And Tornillo's number 9. But then when you go to 5 years, you look, we're at number 9. And so you look at 10 years, we're at number 9. And so we had you all come back to do a study on that. And do you recall that, Ms. Cullen? And where we made those adjustments, because our concern was, how do we address the new teachers that are coming into a district so we could have a better retention within those teachers? And just, I mean, I'm a little shocked at that. I thought we looked at the first 10 years so that way we could address that.
Well, again, keep in mind that we're improving the starting teacher pay. So as we, the way, and we reference to front loading your starting teacher pay, because we're taking you from 42 in this recommended model, we're taking you from a little over 42 to 46,000, okay? And so to be able to ensure that your current teachers, as they move to the next year and pay, that they are receiving the pay of this proposed hiring schedule, which has been set to be competitive. It's not a step increase. We are moving them. They're moving based on their year, so they're moving from a 0 year to a 1 year teacher. Right. So currently, your 0 year teacher makes $42,175. With this proposed $2,250 or 4.5% general pay increase model, they not only get this pay increase, they receive that additional adjustment so that as they move to year one, they're going to move to $46,250. Now, you take a look, as you're referencing to that market comparison page where the 0 year, 5 year, and 10 year are below market comparison rates. If you take a look at that, these adjustments here are pushing the teacher pay more competitive within your market group.
Okay, in our proposal, we're looking at addressing that across not just the starting out.
Not just the starting, but every one of the, so you're not only did your 0 year improve to 46,000.
But the 5 year.
If you take a look at your 5 year, you've gone to $47,350. If you come back and take a look at your market median on page one, and you look at your five-year mark, the median there is $45,498. The recommended under this model one, 5 years, is $47,350. So you can see that the improvement to your teacher pay is not only taking place at the starting salary, but it is continuing through at each one of those five-year breaks that we are able to survey.
Yeah, and I guess my thing was, I mean, we try to address that issue and then we're back at the...
It is a constantly moving market. It needs to be looked at every single year. And I frequently go to districts. I have a lot of districts I go to every year. Once a year, we take a look at it and say, where do we need to make improvements? Because, you know, you never know what someone's going to do and jump out there and go to $47,000. We don't know that now. Yeah. So we can do the best we can to make sure that you're in the market, but I strongly recommend that you take a look at this every year, because you're not going to be able, it's not going to slow down. In fact, I think there's going to be a big leap this year.
Is the price to test be less if we keep you on a continuing basis, like a standing appointment?
The districts that I work with on an annual basis, the fee is much, much smaller because
you're up to speed.
I'm just up to speed on things. It's usually a one-day consulting thing. We just take a snapshot of time. There's no big formal report. We tweak your structures. Unless you want us to come in front of you, I don't usually even do a board report. I just do this, provide it for the board.
I would appreciate if you could give
HR
department up.
We will certainly do that.
Like an estimate.
It's just an ongoing maintenance fee.
Exactly.
It's an ongoing maintenance fee where we just work with you and address with qualification issues and keep
Understandable.
That said, we do value self-verification, district verification of the data, and Martha's working on that as well.
Mr. Coronado, did you have?
Martha, I have a couple of questions.
Thank you.
The proposed increases with the 4.5% across the board with the adjustments, with the added adjustments and the equity, that is already into the proposed budget that you, Martha presented? Mm-hmm. Is it?
No, but it is within the context of the $2 million that's there. Yes.
And when we started this, initially I had asked Dr. Murphy and Martha Gideon to give me a budget. I said, what is it that I have so that we can come back and bring forth a realistic plan? And they had given me a budget to be able to bring this and this forth. And so this is based on the number of dollars that they gave me. This is what the town has been able to work with.
Okay, because looking at the general recommendations and the presentation slides on page 7. We have at the bottom of the page the $31 million at the very bottom of the page on the last slide at the bottom of the page. That's $31 million.
Yeah. And the cost of the increase is the 1.971 next to it.
Right, but then I look at the proposed budget and it's $31.5 million something. But why is it not in?
Remember, we only are working with actual incumbent salaries.
Mm-hmm.
We do not budget for any vacancies. This is not including any vacancies. It doesn't include benefits. It doesn't include.
Okay, so that's
this is your current payroll cost.
This is your current payroll cost, not your entire salary.
Okay,
which is going to include all the other. Exactly. There's always going to be a gap in your salary budget. It's going to include all the, overtime, retirement contributions, subs, other.
So what we have left for the compensation package is $2 million and change these first.
Yes.
Right at $2 million.
The actual dollar amount that was given was 2.75.
Initially.
Can I ask how we came about with that figure?
I'm sorry?
How did we come about with that figure?
Well, when I start rolling out the projections, I take the property values and do an estimate on what's coming in, or what was last year's property valuations, and then with an increase. I also do our PIMS ABA, our October snapshots, and then do a projection, a 2% projection, or whatever the trend is going with the way the student district is growing. And so based on those, and then the revenues, the current revenues, when I see investment earnings, any of the different revenue sources that we currently have, I analyze what we projected for the current year and then see how much we've actually collected, and if we're pretty much on target, then I can make the assumption that we're going to move forward with those same amounts. And so that's how we do the projections.
Martha?
Yes?
On the presentation of the budget, on the slide where it's the 2012-2013 budget priorities,
mm-hmm.
are those already into the budget?
The ones that have the checks?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
There is funding allocated for them, yes.
All right. And that is funded at what amounts?
Based on what was, for example, library resources, we're at $96,000 for library resources. Under the staff development for technology and college readiness, we're using Title II funds, which is for staff development primarily. We're using Title I funding as well, an allocation for that, and then we do have some out of locals. And so, just at different levels, each budget, if each campus has a budgeted allocation of their own for that staff development. But as a district, our main ones are Title II and Title I.
All right. And What I don't see in here is increases in potential increases or are they in already for health, our health coverage?
With the health coverage, we have a minimal increase that is also provided. The information is here, or the advice is given through Mr. Randy.
But
it's already increased.
Increase is already in the budget.
Yes, they are.
All right. The other issue I have is, do we have our PEZ in the budget?
Yes, I do have PEZ within the budget. We have the ones that the needs assessment.
How many do we have?
We currently have 12.
Twelve units that are still available.
Yes.
And that's teachers.
Teachers only. Yes.
All right. Besides those, the health insurance.
That's good.
The board has our previous here to establish some priorities with respect to catching up on some other areas, mm-hmm. like music. Are those already in the
yes, the School of Music is already allocated. I also allocated $35,000 for the athletic department. That was a recommendation that was made every year, and so I didn't have $35,000.
Where did you fund School of Music at?
The School of Music is at 120 right now.
120?
Yes.
Just halfway.
Originally,
at 90 and then
he had said 90, and then he submitted a proposal for 170, and I have him right now at 120. Yeah.
I have a question for clarification. Martha, I'm looking at this. And when you go to the first page at the 2.5% increase, down at the bottom you come to a total, 31 million plus for our total budget. This one. At the bottom of the page, you come, you know, you've got three total cost estimates, and you can see what they are. The next page, when you go to 3.5%, you've got total cost estimate. See what they are? At the very bottom.
Yeah, I see that. I'm going to look and see. It looks like.
And then when you go to the 4.5% estimate, there's no change.
Right. I'm going to double check the numbers on one of these because it looks like on the current budget for teachers is slightly different. Administrators are the same.
We were making some changes in staffing from some job families to others, and that may have contributed to.
It looks like most of it is there's some in the teacher area and some in the information technology area, and it may just be a matter of when we were moving some people around.
So let me give you the clarification for that.
I'm thinking maybe it's just a mistake.
It probably is. Let me just get a clarification, and we can get you some other.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, sir. Yes. Yes.
A couple more questions. Martha, apart from the, do we have a contingency like you put last year in the budget?
No.
We don't have that this year. I think it was like $100,000 or $150,000 last year. We don't have that this year.
It was more. It was like three.
Hmm. No, the three was based for the Northwest Early College.
Yeah.
So, Martha, we have the money to do the 4.5%.
As the way the preliminary evaluations are right now, of course the finals don't come till July.
Understand.
But with assuming that everything stays mm-hmm. the status quo, yes, we're okay.
Okay. Thank you. And it's not like that, nobody gets to eat. We just got to give everybody a raise, but no electricity anymore. There will be enough money to keep operating. And
I did put into consideration the increase in utilities.
Okay.
As needed.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
The other thing that we might want to look at, too, is because the state legislators meeting next year, and we don't know what they're going to do. And we know the structural deficit is going to continue to eat into our pockets. And it looks like they're not going to even address just looking at education, much less the other stuff. So we might look at another or cut next year. And so we have to be cognizant of that fact. The other, if I might, what I would like to look at too on the next time you all come, I'd rather see the adjustments first and how much those adjustments would take place, and looking at whether we're putting those people in the 90th percentile, and those people that are above the 90th percentile, I think, I mean, if they're already at the 100th percentile, why are we moving them up on more of a raise? We need to look at the equity adjustments. I think when looking at the teacher pay scale, I have no problem with it. I think it addresses the issues, but administratively and all the other issues, I want to make sure that we're looking at the market first, and we're looking at making those equity adjustments, and then we're able to see, okay, how much can we give? Because then at that point, if we give it across the board, we're doing, to me, I'd rather do it that way.
All right, Mother, are you talking about once you get the adjustments, then once you get that, then looking at individual people?
No, not individual people. I'm just looking at the market. And if you're saying an individual is at an 88th percentile, or let's say one's at 75th percentile, let's look at putting that person in the 90th percentile. And those individuals that are at 100th percentile, then we wouldn't look at that. Then, do you get what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying, but keep in mind, there's not a percentile for everybody. And so there's not a market for every job.
Well, the ones that are, and looking at whether
so
it was principal.
So then we're kind of picking and choosing.
No, it's looking at the ones that there is a market for,
and, so,
and we're not picking and choosing. We're seeing what is the market within that, you know, if it's a principal or if it's an assistant principal or if it's, you know, our associate superintendent or what it is. If there's a market for that, I want to make sure that we're looking at the market first and then looking at where we can.
But increase. We don't want to pay someone that's new in their position at a 90th percentile necessarily.
Correct.
And so that's something to keep
and
in mind.
We could look we could look at it at midpoint. That would be the better thing to
well,
do.
That's no, even that's stronger.
No, that's even
at 100% of market, you know.
So maybe this will help. The way we do this is we look at the benchmark jobs within each pay grade. We set the middle of that pay grade in some relationship to the market. Usually it's at the 100 percentile or maybe slightly above, knowing that we're going to be using this next year. Okay, so we set the midpoint, the middle of the range, the market target. Then we set the minimum and the maximum on top of that, around that midpoint. Then we place everybody in their pay grades, and then we ran the equity adjustments between the minimum and the market target.
Okay.
So then we looked at, okay, within the market target, looking at your job experience, are you where you should be based on how long you've been in the job? So that piece was run for everybody.
So that's where you're landing, like 82%.
That's where, you know, so we did do both. We set the middle of the range in a relationship to the market. Then we looked at the individuals within that. So if you're already above market, you just got the general pay increase amount. But additional equity was only granted to people who were below the market.
And those that were paid above the pay range maximum, which is set also somewhat in relation to what the market value, those are the ones that we're not recommending the pay increase because they already are so much significantly
above.
The other issue here is I'm able to look at what the market is when it comes to the teacher salary. And this is probably where I'm having more of a difficulty. When those positions that are in the market or have, you know, where you're able to classify it as a market, where there's no comparison. There's no comparison from last year to this year, and there's no comparison district-wide. There's just, the comparison is just across the region. Let's say for assistant principals and whatever it may be, administrative.
We actually provide the school district with the detail that backs up these numbers, so you can look at every, you know, the information is going to be here in the district. You can look at every single school district and see the number of assistant principals, for example, assistant principals,
their duty schedules and the starting pay and the average pay. We've got it all listed out by school district, and that's going to be here in the district to take a look at that. So you can see what El Paso pays, you can see what Socorro pays, you can see what Isleta pays. It's not, you're not going to see individuals within those school districts, but you'll see the averages. So that information is here. We did not, it's pages and pages of data, so we didn't get that to you.
And the last thing is under the pay grades and the proposals like administrative, professional, do we also have that data as well as, and the other thing I would like to see is our
page. I'm sorry, what data are you talking about?
Page 14, where we're looking at proposed administrative professional compensation, and then you have those pay grades, then you have the other ones.
We've got the pay grades and we've got the jobs that have been classified in the pay grade.
Do you have the data where it compares what the market is as well?
For the each one of these? Yes.
Okay, and then the other issue, the other thing that I would like to see, if we're moving one person from another pay grade or to another compensation plan, where in that are they being moved? If you could put, let's say a person was at a pay grade 4, or they were at a pay grade 2, but now they're moved up to a pay grade 4. Better understand that.
We can do that. There's been, I will tell you, there's very, very little of that.
Okay.
If we
could get that on the next one.
This is almost entirely what your job classifications look like right now.
Lana, I want to make sure I get everything you want. So can you summarize again, like, each thing you want?
Well, you all got it, right?
I mean, what let me repeat back to what I think I heard you say. For each one of these jobs where we have a market, and there's not, there's not a market for every one of these jobs.
But the ones we do.
But the ones we have market for, we can see what the market is. You can see what the market is, even though you, keep in mind, you have that already in your packet. You can see what the market is already. You have that. And then you want it to know if there was any of these positions that were moved from one pay grade to another.
Correct.
Okay.
That's just two things.
That's
what you want?
For right now.
Right. And like I said, keep in mind, you already have the market for everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I don't understand what you're asking for, because you already see if you're 84% or 90%. What is it that...
From the proposed market and then what the proposed market is. I rather... look at the equity adjustments first. So if we're looking at somebody's at a 75%, I'd rather look at the equity adjustments and looking at putting them at a 98th percentile.
Now that's
on the ones that we have the market.
Okay, now keep in mind, not all jobs are single incumbent jobs. We have market comparison of averages of individuals. You have positions where there's multiple incumbents. So that comparison is going to reflect 10, 15, let's say, for example, custodians. You have a lot of custodians.
If it's justified, then you could justify it, you know. But if it's not justified, then I want to justify
it. So you're saying go ahead and add the raise and then show where they land?
No.
Look at equity adjustments first and then.
Okay.
So if you looked at the equity adjustments first, let me see if I understood it. Equity adjustments first without any raise applied. Were you thinking you would apply the raise top of the equity adjustments at the end of the day?
Well, looking at if there's a bunch of people that are at 60% and looking at if there's no justification to it, then we would look at putting them up to whatever area we would want to on the market. Then we would look at where it is so that way we can move everybody.
But
we have everybody at the market, and then we're able to look at the increase in that.
Then you'd be providing a different increase for each little subgroup of jobs, which what we're trying to do is get you to look at this in a systematic process of providing a general pay increase to the employees and letting the system do the distribution of pay based on the equity, which is a criteria that's objective and that the system itself is using to progress pay for employees through the pay ranges that have now been, the new pay ranges have now been aligned to your current markets, which is what the information that you have on that market comparison pages that were provided in your packet. So if we run the equity, and the equity is going to be significant, because without the general pay increase, okay, the general pay increase moves people through the pay range. But if we don't do that, your equity adjustments are going to be huge. So it'll move people through that pay range. But the thing to keep in mind here then is, after we've moved those individuals and they fall where they need to go between zero to minimum, between minimum to midpoint, because that's where your equity adjustments are targeting. Once those adjustments are made through that pay range, then to go through and make group adjustments, because we're looking at benchmark jobs.
So what you're saying to me is, if we do a across the board raise, we're going to still have those inequity adjustments.
Well, the
and so we should just leave it the way it is.
The equity adjustments and the percent increase hand in hand. So if you give a higher percent increase, the equity adjustments are less. If you give a lower percent increase, the equity adjustments are going to be more. So they come hand in hand. You can't do one without the other.
Sergio,
yes. Guys, let me tell you, the way we need to look at this is right now, and we're not even going to be able, once we do whatever raise we do, we're not going to be able to tell where we're at until we do it next year in evaluation, guys. This is, we're shooting at an approximate figure. All these other districts are going to raise and give their raises like we're doing right now. We don't know where they're going to fall. This is just to try and inch up. If we try to do and hit the target, like we're going to do it every year. Every year we're going to be off because we don't know what the other districts are doing. What we're doing is trying to get a system in place. If we do and start doing individual subgroups and stuff, it's going to take us one forever, and we're going to involve ourselves in every year doing the same thing. And it's, we need to stick to a system. And every year we evaluate where we're at and make tweaks like our representatives from Tasbeer recommend. Right now, what we need to figure is, the more important thing we need to look at is, that pretty much taps our allotted, $2 million that we have. So what we need to decide is, do we want to fund it at the amount at the $2 million? That's exactly what we have. Is it $2 million they're recommending? Do we want to fund it at that? If we don't, or less. And so what we need to decide is that first, and then decide how we're going to, if we're going to give less than the $2 million, then we need to decide how we're going to do that. Because if you're talking anything else, is, we don't have the money.
We don't.
One. Two, I don't think we have the $2 million to do the compensation package. I think we need to allow for a few more positions increase in teachers, maybe another three. That's going to knock another $150,000 off the $2 million. Okay. Last year we allotted 12, and we used them all up pretty much almost immediately. Right, Mark?
Yes, we did.
Okay. We haven't allotted for a contingency amount like we did last year. If we do this $2 million, we're gonna not include some of the things that were included last year. So we need to decide, first off, how much we're going to put towards the compensation package, and then let's decide. I think what we ought to do is, if look at the 4.5% compensation raise that we're doing, how much of that's going to entail in terms of the $2 million, how much that's going to eat up. And then decide whether the equity raises, we're going to fund them at 100% or maybe at 90 or 80% of those equity adjustments instead of going piecemeal. Is that probably a better recommendation for now? If we're not going to do the entire 100% equity adjustments, you recommend that we do them at a percent?
We could compress the amount of the equity adjustments, move them a little bit slower towards that market target. We run other scenarios. We could do maybe a slightly lower general pay increase and still do some of the equity adjustments, and it still reduces the overall cost. And you have run the 3.5%, which is, you know, several hundred thousand dollars less.
I just want to give some perspective real quick, and if I might, Mr. Coronado. I mean, just last year we were discussing about certain, looking at some equity adjustments, and the major concern when we started discussing this whole TASB study was to making sure we're looking at the equity adjustments so that way we could address those. And then, of course, it's a moving target when you're looking at it, but if we're not addressing the equity adjustments now and then we're waiting for next year, we're just working on that moving target where we just keep on, addressing it. And the thing is, I just want to make sure that we're providing a fair and open when it comes to, the communication, and that's why you all are going to be meeting with employees to make sure that there's any questions. And when you look at organizational behavior, and you're looking at managing, especially at a district this size, and dealing with different individuals when it comes to human resources, you have to get that buy-in and that understanding from the employees of what happened. Because the last time we did the study was we put it in, y'all presented to us, and then we started hearing some of the inequities. And so that's one of the issues that I want to address, is to make sure that we look at the inequities and we address those issues as much as we can. So whether it's closing the gap within the inequities, or whether it's putting everybody at a 90 percentile, and the discussion we had was, okay, if we're at the way bottom, let's look on trying to get to the average. So if we're at 60%, let's try to get to 70-80%, and then we could address that issue. But, we're starting to address it gradually, and next year we could address it more, and it's going to probably change because the market is just a moving target. But if we don't address that inequities and we just give across the board, the other issue is, I don't know who's being moved or what, does that create inequities? Do you get where? I'd rather move closing.
I understand what you're saying. The problem with that, Mondo, is that we can't go through and do equity adjustments for every individual. The way they've recommended to us is that we do it by the groups, and we do it by the 1 to 15 years, and slowly we're going to get, in other words, slowly we're going to get rid of those inequities in the pay scale. But we're doing it through a systems approach rather than taking each individual person.
Not every inequity is going to get fixed, because there have been some past practices, and every district has this. And so to correct a pay inequity from a past practice for that one situation creates a domino effect of other inequities. And so what we're doing is we're doing this in a very systematic process by looking at job experience, and anybody that has 1 year of job experience, if they are not at this level of pay within this pay range of minimum to midpoint, then they should be brought up to that year one pay. But if there's somebody that's paid above that already, it's not going to bring everybody else up to that one higher rate of pay that one person has because of a past practice. But it will overall take care of a majority of inequity.
Right. We're not going to catapult salaries up to the highest paid person for that year of experience.
And I don't want to do that. What I want to do is look at the market and not the individual. I'm looking at the position within that. So if it's like a specialist or something, it's completely different. But when you're looking at, APs, when you're looking at that, I think we need to try to bring that in. And how much would that cost? At least if it was, even 2-3%. But we need to look at the inequities, because then...
Well, like you said, we have done equity adjustments based on the midpoint of the range. The midpoints have been set at the market targets. So what you're asking for has been done. We've set the middle of the range at the market target, and then we are making the equity adjustments between the minimum and the market target. So we've looked at the benchmark jobs for those positions, and then we've made the equity adjustment.
So if you did as Ms. Rodriguez asked and showed where it would wind up.
For each benchmark.
You'll probably satisfy what he's saying, because you're just not showing what would happen.
Right, and that's something we don't normally provide, but we can certainly develop something for you. So at the end of the day, what I'm thinking we might do is to take, like if you were to look on page 7, we've got your current salary compared to market, and then what we do is come up with something that said, after the general pay increase and equity adjustments, this is the new comparison to the market. Understanding that you're looking at next year's salary compared to last year's market. And as long as you understand what those numbers are.
They're not going to vent.
And one scenario of a 4.5 or 3.5, because to do multiple comparisons based on different types of general pay increases, we're just going to end up with a bunch of different reports and comparisons. Okay.
Mr. Cornell?
Armando, I don't mind that if we're placing a greater importance on those equity adjustments, that we fund instead the pay raise at 90% and keep the equity adjustments at 100%. If you think that that's more important to do, the problem is, that pay raise is getting everybody towards, it's lifting everybody towards the market.
Yes.
Pretty much
we must.
The pay increase applies to everybody.
Everybody.
Not just the people below the
$1
range. It applies to everybody but those 10 people. So that's why we look at a general pay increase, so everybody gets something.
But there is a maximum value of pay, and so those individuals who may be paid above maximum, in our current model, are only recommended to go up to the maximum. There is no cost model here to take anybody above the maximum of a pay raise. Okay. So we have set a maximum value of pay for anybody that may be paid above market, and you don't have that many.
And just the last thing is to make sure that we just communicate that we're looking at a 2.5, 3.5, and a 4.5.
Well, and that was the guidance that we were requesting from you all, as far as, this is a work in progress, and so for us to complete our work and start, what direction you all want to give us as far as that's concerned, so that we can continue with this.
And through the chair, on the front page in the letter, you'll notice we wrote that administration recommends a general pay increase of between 3.5 and 4.5, with an optimal at 4.5. So we just recommend between that range, with the optimal being 4.5.
I would just like to see on the letter the numbers reconciled on this, because the numbers are not right on this, and I keep looking at all the different ones. They're not. That's all I need to see.
That will be done.
I guess then you all need some type of direction from either going 3.5 or 4.5 or 2.5, or if we wanted to change it to a 3.0 or whatever it may be.
And then run those scenarios based on whatever you want to see.
Also, for me, I would like to see more information as far as when the last time we gave raises were and the different categories, because it wasn't here. And I know it, but not off the top of my head. And when I'm looking at this, I want to compare what we have currently. And that there's nowhere to compare that in any of this. Like, there's brackets, but I was actually having to go to the web to actually look at the different kinds of pay scales and see where they're at. I would like to see something currently, what we have now in place, so I can compare apples to apples and not just look at this.
As far as what currently your current job
is? Our current pay scales,
okay.
I want that. And I also wanted to see in the past, when was our last salary increases and which brackets did we take care of? When did teachers get a raise? When did administrators get a raise? When did auxiliary get a raise? I need that information.
But you have all of that. We're not going to have all of that. You're going to come up with that. We're going to go back and do that.
Go back and research that. I know that what we did last year, I can fully explain that prior to that.
You mean just last year?
The last time we gave an increase.
Well,
Like last year, we gave the teachers 1.5 in the step, and we gave everybody else 4 days and 1.5, right?
4 days.
Okay.
I'll go back and look and see.
Any more information?
Some of those were actually not raises.
No.
It was just adjustments.
It was just getting us back
to what we had cut the year before.
Yeah. I'm talking about a raise. I'm talking about an actual raise.
Was the 1.5, I
really
think.
Only the teachers.
But last year kind of really didn't work like a raise because we had taken the days away and they kind of really wasn't a raise. Mm-hmm. It was trying to bring them back. It was a small increase. But I'm okay with the teacher part of this. I really like what I see on the teacher part. On the rest of it, not so much.
I'm not sure exactly. Remember that on the rest of it, and I will provide you the current pay scales. Remember I said that the clerical and paraprofessional pay scale is one? They developed two brand new ones.
Yes, I noticed that.
So they're separated out. So that one pay scale, you'll have to go in and look because it's a combined now.
So what may have been a current one previously or a current a five, and in this new pay structure is a two, the numbers are not an indicator of where the jobs are, it is the pay range, because we've got complete new pay structures.
Yeah, but it'll still have the breakdown for midpoint and...
Yes, ma'am.
So, Martha, you will be providing us a list of positions that were upgraded
from
pay grade to pay grade.
You want the actual movement of
this? It's very few, but yes, we have it.
There was a couple that were changed, and that was about it. So
that's right. Now, what totally changed was the clerical and paraprofessional.
Now, those,
I mean, they're all over the place because they've changed, like I said, they're new pay scales. Right. So that totally, everybody on those pay scales just changed out into the two new pay scales.
And now, may I ask a question? Well, I'm not going to talk about any particular position, but I guess you have to look at a particular position to what motivated a position to move up or actually was moved up or down?
For the very few that we did adjust, it was driven by market and job responsibilities. So that's remember when we first started with the presentation. And we looked at pay system objectives, pay for the job value. That's looking at the market and taking a look also at the level of skill and responsibility for the job.
Is that good for you, Patty?
Thank you.
The only thing I think we need to go a little bit more conservative, especially when we're looking at the budget for next year. And I mean, the most I would want to go up would be a 3.5, and I would say a 3 point just to look at overall to make sure before the state legislator meets, and what if they cut another 5% across our budget, and we're barely putting our revenues within our expenditures, and we don't know what's going to happen.
So aside from 4.5.
I would say a 3.0.
A 3.0? Okay.
But your recommendation is the 4.5 to bring us up to...
The recommendation is 4.5, keeping in mind that overall you are next to the last as far as teacher pay, and you have very low to market comparison for all job groups. As that little summary chart indicated, so to even make improvements in overall pay comparisons, we are going to have to provide a pay increase to move pay and make it more competitive to market, given that the other area districts
yes.
more than likely are going to provide a pay increase as well.
Understand.
And the other issues we might look at giving teachers more of an increase in or vice versa.
Now, something to keep in mind on that as well is we are looking at really making your teacher pay very competitive. So when we do that and we don't make adjustments to the pay system overall, because it's interconnected, it's a puzzle, And so anytime we move one piece of this puzzle separately, it impacts the pay. So if you have a teacher, if your teacher's schedule is adjusted and it's improved, and your teachers are making this amount of money, so line-to-market is more competitive, and they're going to move to the administrative professional ranks to be an assistant principal or a counselor or an elementary principal, they may lose money if they move into those positions if we don't adjust the whole pay system equally.
Until we adjust that inequity.
Well, the thing is, you need to respect the integrity of that career path. And what happened, I've seen it with districts, what they'll do is they go, oh, we're not going to adjust any of the administrators, and we're just going to, and they're very generous with their teachers, and it happens all the time. But after a while, that teacher pay schedule has been graciously and generously adjusted, and then it starts overrunning the administrator pay scale, which has not been adjusted. So the teachers are paid more generously than their administrators compared to the market, and what's going to happen is that if there's the overlap, it becomes too great. And so there isn't any room for them to, there isn't any room for them to be promoted upwards, to take on the additional responses.
I completely understand what you're saying, but in this district, typically what has happened is teachers kind of stay stagnant and the administration tends to go up. And I respect the study you did, and I see it, but every time we hire administration, they don't come in, like, I don't believe that we brought them in that low. I think we brought them in okay, and the backlash that we've had from the teachers because of that is significant. I mean, that's been a concern as far back as I can remember, that the top people are always taken care of and the teachers go by the wayside. I mean, I completely get what you're saying, but I just want to make that as a side comment because it has been a problem in our district, I think. I mean.
Well, there's been a lot of problems.
Yes.
Monica, no, that's not the way it is. The problem is, in the past, and since I've been on the board, we gave teachers a raise every year, and sometimes we'd give them more than the rest of the administration. So over the years, what's happened is we've had our teachers try to maintain competitiveness. And our administrators and the rest, we kind of didn't give those raises. And you can look at it. I mean, I've been here on the board for 10 years, and that's what's been happening. And then so what happens is when we hire new people from outside for these administrative positions, we have to pay them higher. Because traditionally, we've kept our administrative ranges lower because we didn't give up those corresponding increases, exactly what you're talking about. So when we hire somebody new, we have to pay those administrators higher. Why? Because of the market conditions. That's the problem. It's not that we've focused on giving an administration. That's incorrect. Because I've been here when we've given those raises. The problem is that teachers look at it now saying we're trying to take up administrators, when in the past we focused more on the teachers. So I disagree with you on that. Because the board in the past were very concerned with the teachers first and foremost. And well, you can look at the increases from the last 10 years, and a lot of times we give the teachers raises, we wouldn't give administration any, or it'd be a lot less.
So I get what you're saying, but also if you go back and you look at history, our administrators that have been here since 10, 15 years that have worked their way up, their increase was pretty much a joke, and people that were coming in from the outside were getting huge increases, and it is true. I'm sorry, but it is true. It is true.
And
people that have been here, been faithful to us, been loyal employees that want to expand their career, that want to work their way up, got minimal increases, and people that were coming in new, huge increases. And it's true. I mean, for as long as I've been on the board, which it's only been 3 years, 4 years, that's what I've seen. That's the trend that's been happening. And that's what I think needs to stop. We need to...
No, I disagree with you. The trend is not that we pay the people coming in, that we give them higher raises. We bring them in, and if we don't raise that to the market level, they're making some more somewhere else. They're not going to come over here. And the problem is that we've traditionally in the past have paid our administrators or their raises a lot less. That's a problem. It's not that when new people come in that we're giving them an increase. We have to, or those are not going to come.
And that's
so
why
we have to raise
but I think
our schedule on all our administrations.
I think what
and
Monica's
the way to do it is an assistant-wide approach. Okay.
Exactly.
And the inequities of the
well,
market.
Well, I guess in order to recruit, I mean, yes, you're going to pay them closer to market, but then that's where the inequities come in.
Correct.
For the people that are already here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they're here in the system already, and again, no raises.
Correct.
Or minimal raises.
Exactly.
So their pay raise
why we need
doesn't
to bring them
increase
up.
Mm-hmm. As that's quickly as the market moves. And when people are moving and we're trying to recruit, then of course those larger salaries may come to play in some instances. But again, this is how we address the internal inequities with the pay rates.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
My suggestion is, you know, if we're really interested in those equity adjustment pieces, traditionally we've had an issue with that, is that I think we fund the equity adjustments at a higher percentage than we do the overall
raise.
And that's what I'm trying to get.
And
at.
I think
lower raise and
well, lower the 4.5% raise overall.
Okay.
And I'm thinking maybe
4.
I don't know, 3%. 3% is that's lowering it by 33.5%, by a third of a
4.
By 33.5%. In other words, going down to 3.0.
Yeah, maybe a 4% then.
I'm thinking 3.5 or 4.
Or 3.
3.5 or 4. And then take a look at what percentage we can fund the equity adjustments, maybe at higher than the
and closing that gap.
And what you said, we need to make sure we're going to have that PES if we need to hire more teachers.
And so we're approaching it the different way. But the different way I think we need to look at is, I think we probably need to knock off the top of this $2 million that we have available, about $400,000 or $500,000. To have available for our PES and our other priorities that we want to make sure we address. Mm-hmm. All right, so that leaves us with maybe 1.6 million. So what do we do? If we fund it at a 3 or 3.5%, let's find out at what percent then we can fund the equity adjustments and see what that looks like.
It looks to me like if we give a 4.5% raise, it's $1,541,000. Mm-hmm. That is just for the raise. And the equity adjustment on that is $425,000.
Right.
Which brings it up to the 1,966.
Right.
So if we went to pop over to the other page and took the 3.5% raise, we're at $1.2 million for just a raise. That's all you're getting is your raise.
Right.
And the equity adjustment, I'm guessing, stays the same at $425,000.
Does the equity adjustment stay static?
No.
So this is back to this is just
back to the higher general pay increase, the lower the equity adjustments because you're giving everybody the same.
But that goes back to these are not the right numbers that are on this paper because they show same. No, they don't.
So
they actually show lower equity adjustment on this paper.
The higher the percentage increase,
the lower the equity.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So if we do 4.5%, we're at $1.5 million for a pay raise,
mm-hmm.
And 425,000 for equity adjustment.
We need to cut that by 5%.
So if we did maybe a 4% raise, the equity adjustment could then be almost.
Is that what you're saying?
No.
The overall cost would be, let's see, 3.5 is like 1.6, 4.5 is 1.9, it would probably be 1.75.
Okay.
Roughly.
So that's some savings.
It's going to be in between. Right in between.
They deserve more.
And President Searles, just as a note on some of the numbers and the totals here, as we started out with the 2.5% and we moved to the 3.5% and the 4.5%, we were receiving updated information mm-hmm. on counts that may have been missing from the pay files that we had initially received at the very beginning. And so that is partially why possibly we've got some differences in totals, because
I understand.
Remember, this is that snapshot in time, but we'll give a total current snapshot of everything that we have now that we've done all the updates based on 2.5, 3.5, 3 or 4.
I have to tell you, I am very comfortable doing 4.5%, doing exactly what is recommended. And the reason I am is the last sentence in this letter. Martha Carrasco has signed off. I'm sure Martha Gitte is signing off on this. And I ask this, are these sustainable? Are we going to be able to next year go, oh, well, sorry, you got a pay raise, but guess what? You're all getting docked this year.
We're doing a trip in 4 days.
Yeah, you're back to 6 days is gone. And I have been assured in this letter, and I believe by the administration, that that is correct. This is sustainable.
Right.
And that next year nobody's going to have to give their paycheck back.
That's true.
They are going to get, and we're not going to have to say, I'll turn the lights out because we can't have them on. Is that, I mean, you feel secure in saying that?
Yes, ma'am.
And Martha Gitte, you feel secure in telling us that we can afford a 4.5% raise with these equity adjustments as a beginning, only a beginning, am I correct, ladies, to getting this, if you were to come back year after year, the equity adjustments, theoretically, should become
very small.
They should go away.
Yeah.
So that in 2 years, we won't even see that as an issue. Everybody then will be at equity, and we will just begin giving...
As long as the district maintains...
Yes.
Pay increases provided
understand.
And meeting by area districts as well.
Yes.
So, but if the district doesn't do that,
yeah, then you fall behind.
You fall behind.
The obvious. Yes. But Martha.
Well, the other thing that I have to say is that as other initiatives come in, right now we're hitting that, not knowing how much our projected enrollment is in future years, although we know that there's growth coming our way. I can tell you for the future years. However, right now we can't, the budget can afford it, but it's a tight budget.
Okay, and could you then make a recommendation, because I really agree with Mr. Coronado with our PEZs. We used them up and they were used up quickly. I then would like to see a recommendation on the additional PEZs and how that would relate to this as a whole. Hang on, Dr. Murphy. Mr. Coronado's little finger was at first. Mr. Coronado.
Madam Chair, what I suggest is that I think we need about $500,000 in reserve in terms of for the extra PEZ and extra.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, one other thing we're not considering is, I don't know when we're going to institute our new HVAC into the district. That's going to raise considerably our
electric bill.
Electric bill. We're not even considering when and how much that's going to be. I don't want to use up all our $2 million and then go through the middle of the year and say, we ended up with a deficit for next year because we didn't plan on this.
Okay.
I don't feel comfortable using up our entire $2 million. I think we ought to put a projection of $1.1 million towards the raise, whatever that percentage amounts to, and $400,000 towards our equity adjustments and see how we can fashion those. And then leave the $500,000 for our extra PEZ and contingency funds for our other.
God bless you. Ms. Aguita, could you come back with that in mind, that we do see the need for PEZ?
Right.
We do definitely see the need for a substantial increase and for equity, and yet we still see that we need to have a little bit of comfort room, too. Can you bring us back with something that looks like that, budget-wise, and how that reflects the rest of the budget.
Through the chair, I apologize.
Just real quick, I just want to point out that the other factor that's going to come into place in the next year or two is a new pre-K-8, and that's going to...
I asked him that, too. I asked, do we get to open the new school and nobody works there?
We don't know what the state legislator is going to do.
No, we have teachers.
I mean, we don't know pretty much how we'll be until the state legislator convenes next year.
No, but we get, essentially we get $10,000 per classroom.
Yeah, but you need about $2 million per opening and invite new board. More than that, right? How much did we
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, the only thing I see is that some of the administration, before we open the PK through 8, is going to be hired months before, and that's also not taking into account.
But I don't think that's going to be in this year's budget.
No, it will be in the following budget. But if we put our increases that tight right now, come next time around, we're not going to have that much room. And the following year is going to be the next biennium. I don't know what's going to happen then.
I can only hope that our losses.
Our entire $2 million.
We've modeled a 3.5% general pay increase with the equity adjustments that runs into about $1.6 million. We've already run that number.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere around there I feel comfortable with.
And that falls within the $400,000 mark for the equity and the $1.2 million for a general pay increase.
That to me is more within what I think.
That falls.
Could you please repeat again?
That is about a $1.6 million overall. It's the $1.2 million for general pay increase that gives the teacher $1,775 general pay increase.
Okay.
3.5% of pay range midpoint for all other job families, and then an additional $425,000 in additional equity adjustment after that for a total of $1.6 million.
That's more, I think, is what within our...
Ms. Segura, can...
That does fall within administration's recommendations. Mm-hmm. Between 3.5 and 4.5, with 4.5 being the optimal, the 3.5 falls within that. And saves us $500,000.
And I think in so doing, we're good stewards of our funds. That we've thought ahead for extra teachers. The ones we have are going to get a pay increase. The ones that need it are going to get equalized to some extent. And we have begun the ball rolling to bigger and better. And
next year, hopefully, we collect.
Yeah, and that next year we'll... And I really would, Dr. Murphy, and I hope the board has the same sentiment, I would like to have these ladies back every year this time to work with Ms. Carrasco.
We would be delighted to do that.
And I hope the board feels the same. If we have any money left over.
After we spend all of it.
Squeeze all of it out.
Is actually very small.
Okay.
And
we won't torture you through all of this every year, probably. It'll be easier.
You probably won't want us back to come to see you.
So to clarify then, we are moving with a 3.5.
Discussion and
you could start working with those numbers.
Right. Start working with that and then run some of these scenarios that you've asked us to do.
Does the board feel comfortable?
I feel comfortable.
I can't see Letty's face.
Yes.
Sorry.
Monica, do you feel comfortable? Rachel? Patsy? Okay. Yeah,
We appreciate it, board. Thank you very much.
Oh, we appreciate your hard work. We know that it's been painful, and Ms. Segura, you're going to have to squeeze that budget again. Steve, you're not going to get a raise.
No.
I'm sorry.
just to make sure that we're clear, because we're talking about salaries and salary schedules, the board has not taken any official action to approve.
No.
We're just going to take the numbers
target.
And run some scenarios.
Okay. Does that? And we're just, our target is going to be 3.5%.
Okay. And with equity adjustment.
With the equity adjustments and put some away for the pairs, which are the possible new hires, and come back in May with the revisions. Do I see bobbing heads? Lindy,
and
I can't
you're
see
you're taking it tomorrow to the
Rachel.
Yes. No, we're rescheduling and we're going to meet with the employee groups. We're not
tomorrow.
Originally, we had scheduled to meet with employees today, but we wanted to then wait to see what the board's input was on that. And then once you provide us the guidance, we'll go ahead and schedule the meetings. But I know the ladies have scheduled with other school districts tomorrow, so they're going to have to come back another day and we'll schedule that with the employees. So now that we know it's a 3.5, we can move forward with working on the schedules and working on the information and then preparing that to communicate with the employees.
Okay. Everybody feel Rachel. What did you say, Letty?
I'm just kidding.
Thank you.
I think this is the first.
No, just kidding.
Thank you, ladies, very much. We appreciate your patience in working us through it. And
thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you, Ms. Carrasco.
And thank you, Board. We appreciate you in your work in that as well.
100% equity, right? No.
We want a pay raise.
What about the board raise?
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot the budget vote.
You get 100%. You get two peppermints instead of one.
Oh, thank you. Okay, Tony. That now brings us to number 6, the consent agenda.
Administration recommends approval of the consent agenda as presented.
And, you know, it's a really long consent agenda, and I do see a member of the CBAC. Maybe I see more than one. I think only
two.
Two. Okay, the other one. Okay. I'd like you to, you know, I know that if you would please reveal this information to your CBAC committee. We have 9 meetings that this board has attended between the last of February and the 1st of April. Those are an unbelievable amount of meetings that every one of us have sat through, and they don't get over at 6 o'clock or 6:30. We're here till 10. And this is why we haven't been at your CBAC meetings. If there's ever a question, you know, where are those board members? We are beyond gainfully occupied in really caring for the district. It's not because we don't care. And please, if someone would relay that to your group, because we really do care. And we care so much we're here 9 meetings in a month and a half's time. I mean, we care. So if, I mean, there's just so much of us that can go around. Please relay that. And with that, is there anybody who would like to pull anything from the consent agenda?
I would.
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to pull J.
J, the employee recognition furniture.
Yes, ma'am. Pending the number of RSVPs.
Yes. Dr. Murphy, did you hear RSVPs on the employee?
I apologize. I'm saying bye to the ladies.
Okay.
For 2 days working.
Yes. Okay, we'll pull that. Does anyone else have anything they would like to pull? Dr. Murphy, have you heard back from the employee recognition banquet?
Gustavo is our point man, along with Ms. Carrasco.
Okay, hang on, Gustavo. We'll do the rest and then pull it, and you can answer. Anybody else have anything to pull from the consent agenda? No? With that, yes?
Item F.
Item J.
Yeah.
F. F2? F and J. That sounded bad.
Oh, I see. Did someone pull F?
F and J.
F and J.
The F and J has been pulled. Yes, sir. Anybody else? Steve, did you want something else?
No.
Okay. I thought I saw his hand go up. Okay, Tony?
Is there a motion to approve?
Oh, no. Anybody else?
I so move.
Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Motion made and seconded to approve the consent agenda as written, with the exception of F and J.
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Carnot?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searle?
Yes. And that takes us to F.
Board President Sorrells, members of the board, Dr. Murphy, members of the audience. We placed before you some information regarding our 1207 for our annual financial audit services. We do have some conflicts there we'd like to discuss with you, and Mark can talk a little bit about it.
As we met, we received the bid proposals, and the qualified were actually 2 bid proposals, one of which was our existing external auditor or firm. In reviewing, or concerns came up as we, as a committee, selecting committee met and reviewed the policy that indicated, and it's policy CFC local, that indicates that a mandatory rotation of the audit firm is required at the end of a five-year period. And so as we, taking that into consideration, we went through with an actual committee review of the proposals and made a selection. However, our concerns are because it's a mandatory rotation, and if the committee selected the same audit firm, how do we handle that situation? Mm-hmm. We have options that, you know, we've thrown out and would like some board direction as far as how you'd like us to proceed. The first one is follow the policy, and doing so by default will award the auditing services to the other firm without exit, you know, without having met the qualification or the committee's recommendation.
There's only two firms.
The second one is to postpone the award and continue with maybe additional presentations and interviews by both firms, just to see, you know, if the committee feels changes their mind in the qualifications that they reviewed. The third is to start the process again. This would obviously put some dates as far as our audit beginning. Usually we start in June, so that would obviously be a time constraint. And the fourth is extend the current audit firm for another year and continue. What I did do is contact the other districts in the region, and the four largest districts are using the same audit firm that we reviewed and found to be the most.
And that the committee recommended?
Right.
Okay.
Through the chair.
Wait a second.
And then one other smaller district does have, is currently using the second
Yes, Dr. Murphy.
Mr. Blanco, on option four, suspending the current policy, how would that work?
The board would have to vote on it. It's a board policy, it's a local policy. I reviewed with Ms. Aguirre, she called me and looked at it. It was adopted, I'm not sure when, but it requires a rotation of firms. In other words, if you've been the auditor for 5 years, the policy default is that you can't be the auditor for the sixth year. Somewhere along the way, the board made a decision to change and say we're not going to continue to have the same auditor, we're going to rotate them. Theoretically, it would mean that the audit firm that you have now would be out for 1 year, but then could rebid and come back again in the seventh year. I was not here at the time when that was done. I don't know why it was done. I know that Mr. Gibson's here.
What'd you say?
He's your external auditor.
No.
Yeah, it's an RFQ.
I can't, just under Open Meetings Act, I can't let you speak.
Can I give you a little brief history?
Please.
I guess some of this research that was presented to us just under best practices, and nothing with Mr. Gibson and their firm, I think they've done a great job for the district, and I think they'll continue to do a great job. But looking at, when you're looking at an external audit, you just don't, some of the research that was showing is, you know, especially after, what is it called? Enron and all that, there's just check certain policies that was put into place. And some of the research was, okay, if you just rotate it every 5 years and you're able to see, you're able to not have some type of consistency in case if there were to be something like, which happened to Enron. So out of the best practices, the board decided to rotate just that position every 5 years. The other thing in regards to that is the fact that the four areas that the board has sole control of is, of course, one, the external audit, two, the internal auditor, three, the attorney, and four, the superintendent. So when those committee recommendations, those are done like the attorney and other stuff. I think Gibson, the firm is a very qualified firm for this, but I think it's beneficial for us to, you know, change the way it's done in the past and how we look at it in the future. I don't have a problem in the future if Gibson and them could do that. Now, the other issue is when Dr. Murphy had sent out something about counseling, I said, well, wait a minute. The other issue is, was it advertised or what? And so I don't know if what is the board wanting to do it. We could accept the RFQ, follow the policy, or we could send out letters to other firms locally and maybe in the state to see if there's any experience in that area. So that's just
so what you're saying is kind of what Ms. Aguirre said for direction, that do we wait and allow more people to enter in to the arena?
That's I don't know what the legalities
are. One thing I'd like to note is that back when I believe the policy, and it was the year I had just come on board into Granadillo, I know that the policy was changed at the time, and we did have a new firm that was selected because of that policy. Now that firm, I'm not sure to the details, but I believe they sold the practice and sold it to GRP. So it's been 4 years that we've been with GRP, but the board had given direction to go out for an RFQ this year. And so in essence, this would be the fifth year. However, the board gave us direction that we needed to go out for an RFQ. And so now we're facing this.
So it is truly not the fifth year. We truly do not have to do this.
I didn't. That's the first time I've heard that. I wasn't aware of the fact that if it was a different legal entity that did the audit in year one, that year one doesn't count under the policy against GRP. It's a different legal entity. I don't know how they acquired
the practice,
but
so that we could wait until next year to go through this policy mandate.
That's one of the options on the table. The other thing, when we did it, there was actually how many firms? And what we did was, there was the external audit of our financials, and then we had our health audit and some other. Do you recall?
And if I remember correctly, I wasn't here at the time, but if I remember seeing the files, that the company that did that part went out of business or something, and then we were left with just the external audit.
Right. And I don't know the specifics, truthfully, too.
We never really did get a good audit in those areas. That's the way I remember it.
And the other thing is, since the policy would just go under the external audit, I don't know who's doing the other audit when it comes to the health and all that. That, I mean, the policy doesn't, if I'm correct, Mr. Blanco.
Yeah, you can do the RFQ can be issued at the request of the board for any function at any time. The policy just says that you will review it and change it every 5 years for the external audit function. The fact that you've issued it now, which would technically be the fourth year of the GRP contract, it's okay that you've done that. You just have to make a decision if you want to go ahead and continue with them, which you can.
That's what we do.
You can do it for a fifth year, but then you would have to reissue the RFQ next year, as long as you continue to have that policy in place, because they would then be in their fifth year of the contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To the chair.
Yes, sir.
Administration stands ready to do whatever you guys want. We communicated during the week in Eagle Notes and in Friday Packet about all this, but you know, whatever you guys want to do, we can implement.
Question. Did we go through the normal procedures of advertising here, there, and
we actually had it out a week longer than we technically have to have it on the street.
And came back with.
Did we put it on the paper?
I'm sorry? Yes, it was in the El Paso Times. It was 2 days. It was posted on
I believe
February the 17th and February the 24th.
I believe the last time they also mailed
letters and letters of invitation.
So
I think the pool of companies that do that now is slowly dwindling. There's really not a lot of becoming more technical.
At least in this area, I'm assuming you go to.
Yeah, all the big firms have left, right? Well, I can't. We're in the process. Yeah, KPMG and all like the big have left.
So the pool's getting a little bit smaller.
Yes, sir.
I suggest that, you know, we're staying with the policy. We did have a different firm. We had that first firm we only had for 1 year, so we really already did the rotation.
Okay.
Not because we hit the 5 years, but because of company change. So I suggest that we, for now, follow our policy, wait till the next year, go out for the RFP next year, and see what happens. Right now, I don't suggest we go out and do anything other than, I don't want to delay our, what's happened, you know, in the past is, one, we shrunk our year this last year, and that was an issue in terms of ROI.
Yes.
I, you know, we're finally starting to get back. I don't want to get this in the middle of it and have an issue with that.
Would you like
My suggestion is I think we ought to just go ahead and...
Would you like to make that in the form of a motion?
I guess motion would be not to accept anything on the RFQ and keep our internal audit. So that would mean that we just, I mean, our external audit, just do away with the RFQ, so we're not going to take anything. We don't have to really do any...
I'll second that.
Board direction, too.
And okay. The issue here, now that it's been seconded, is the same discussion we had last year. And so we went out with the process. I'm fine with either or. I mean, it's just we went out for a process, and whether we want to open it up or not is a question to see if we're able to get more people and then make that decision as of this year, because that's what we discussed last year. But.
And that is after President, if I may. Mago's exactly correct. We have been directed to gather all the professional services and RFQs, get them on a five-year rotation, get them to the board. That was direction that was given to us several months ago. And this is,
this is the result.
Mm-hmm. The result of that. And we are committed to following out what the board desires and bringing those to you on that rotation. But if it is year four, we have an option.
We're still within policy, technically, because it is a different firm.
Let's vote it up or vote it down. Tony?
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Cordova?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes. And with, I guess, the direction that next year's 5 years, and so we...
The only concern I have is if we come up with the same situation next year, what are we going to do? We need to start looking at it.
We'll have to move.
We could have the same scenario next year, so we need to figure out a way.
Begin to prepare, maybe, whatever prepare equals.
Well, what I'll do is go out for bid a little earlier, so if this comes again, we can still have a chance to go out again, or we'll have a chance to, if you want to look at policy again, and however you want to do it, we'll have time to do it. So.
Yes, sir.
I think maybe we ought to take a look at the policy here pretty soon before we do that, because all the other professionals we did are in a rotation of 5 years, but not mandatory. The only one we did mandatory was the external audit. In other words, the other professionals, they can apply, we could hire them back. I think the only one mandatory one was the external audit. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
But so I think that there was a reason.
There was.
A reason, and an understandable reason, to check and balance. But I agree with you. We can take that possibly to Ms. Gonzalez's policy committee in the future.
So maybe we could look at that prior to going on a bid again, so that we don't have the same situation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice tie.
Thanks.
Okay. Now that takes us to J. The employee recognition event furniture option, and Gustavo.
Yeah, we have President Searles, members of the board. We closed off our RCP session on Friday, and received a good response. We have about 450 people RCPing. That includes purchased guest tickets as well. After the week was over, starting on Monday, we received some calls and some interest in some latecomers. So after discussing it in cabinet, we decided to extend the RSVP process till next Thursday, April 26th. We have received already several RSVPs. We have not counted those yet, but we do feel that it will reach the 500 plus level.
And what's the date of the event again?
May 11th.
May 11th. So we're at 450 currently. And I want to buy an extra ticket.
Great. 452.
Okay.
Yes, and we have spoken with people at Grace Gardens, and they're well aware of our accounting situation here, and we're well within their deadlines to finalize the number with them.
And
we won't be able to advance it again, though. This will be a one-time advance.
That was going to be my next question. They give us another week or two?
After the April 26th?
Oh, we have till April 26th,
oh, yes,
so we've
fine.
Got
yeah, we are,
10
well
days.
Within. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do they have to fly in this furniture?
I'm sorry?
Probably just got
to
get
do they have to fly in this furniture?
No, I believe it's a local venue.
So we still have time?
We still have some time, yes.
We have till the 26th.
Say we table on it.
Yeah, we'll be back here before the 26th.
The 26th is next Wednesday.
Oh.
Or
it's next Thursday.
We'll be at Far West.
Far West.
We'd have to come and do a meeting on Wednesday, the day after we get back.
Or we could have a meeting on that Thursday before we leave. We can all meet here, have a 5-minute meeting before we get on our little bus.
Or you could set a threshold in your motion.
I won't be in
if
attendance.
If we reach such number, then go ahead and get the furniture.
Yeah. I won't be in attendance.
What's wrong? Wendell has a function.
That's fine.
Okay. Well,
such as how many of you do you have right now?
We have about 450 right now.
And the capacity is 630?
670.
Oh, no.
But that's very tight. That's a very tight capacity.
You have 450 total or 450?
450 total. That includes the guest tickets. Yeah.
And at what point do we need to get the extra furniture?
I'm not sure of the timeline, but I do know by the end of the month we need to tell Grace Gardens our exact count so that we can finalize the food count and I'm assuming that also includes this.
It's Monday, April 30th. I spoke to her personally.
Gustavo, could we get half the furniture?
I'm not sure. I haven't spoken to her, but that's a possibility. I can ask.
Could you
that
could then, you ask that? That yes. You know, if our numbers don't get to the high level, maybe we only need half of the furniture.
And that's something I can ask for.
Would the board be good having him ask that too?
Well, actually, does it need to come up?
It's under the threshold, totally. But
you out it, but the total.
Okay, well, let's just direct
above.
You.
Yeah, it is.
The total figure's above, and so that's why we brought it back.
Oh, you're correct. Okay.
But you could direct me to make a decision.
Well, depending on the numbers, I mean.
You could set a threshold.
Yes, then I move. Just let him do it.
Let Dr. Murphy.
Yeah, this is the way I feel. That you're going to see the numbers. And if the numbers are there, get the furniture. If the numbers aren't there, pass. Or if we can get half the furniture, use that as an option to, you know, we only got half the people, get half the furniture.
And I can communicate with you guys in Eagle Notes and Friday Pack about
sure.
how the number's going up.
Mm-hmm.
And if
Does
anyone
that,
has a serious concern, they can always contact me.
Does that sound fair?
Yes.
I don't see any serious concerned faces, so for right now, we're good, Dr. Murphy.
Thank you.
Okay. That takes us to somewhere.
New business.
Item 7A is first reading of TASB update 93. Just ask them.
Good evening, board members. I had, during our committee meeting, have gone through all the policies, and I do want to, I will go over them again if you wish. If not, I can go over. For example, CW, we did not talk about it. And I did inquire with TASB Policy Services if you remember, and I got an explanation, so I want to share that with you. The Vantage Points, it is a condensed version for the board on local policies that have been affected in some way or another. However, it is not, for example, in this instance, when I was talking about CW, it is a unique policy to kind of deal. So this is basically something that all boards get, that is in their distribution packet, and so they're saying if there's anything that is unique to kind of deal, it's not going to be in here, and that's why they add additional policies. I also provided you the explanatory notes for each one of all, for all the policies, which includes also legal for your review, and it's got the comments and the explanations. It has a brief snippet of what the changes on that policy. And basically on our policy CW, it just changed to naming of facilities. I believe that we had it, it was new facilities, and so they just made some changes on the verbiage to make it more, I guess, more reader-friendly. And basically throughout the policies, that's what we saw. We also had, I was going to bring back to you policy FDB, and that is something that Mr. Blanco is still reviewing. And so we will bring that back. If you remember, I mentioned that we had a cautionary letter from CASB on that policy in regards to some of the language that was also unique to Confio that they felt was contrary to legal policy. And so Mr. Blanco has researched that and is still reviewing that. I don't know, Mr. Blanco, is there anything you want to say to that?
Yeah, I want to just add, thanks Martha for the comments. Martha got the policy to me and the cautionary letter from CASB. I just did not get a chance to finish reviewing it, so it's my fault, not Martha's fault, that that one's not finalized. The conflicts are in the timelines. We have a legal policy that has specific timelines, but the local policy has different timelines. I don't know how that happens, but there's a conflict between the policies, so we need to fix that, and then we'll bring it back to you.
And if I recall, at the very back of Vantage Points, it says that policy nine or update 93 is not like something that you like 91, where we needed to do it now. If you look, maybe one of the last pages in there, it says, I believe something to the effect that we could defer this.
Well, basically, that applied to two policies, FFH local and FFI local, talking about student welfare. Remember we talked about one of the policies, FFH local, has to do with freedom from discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. FFI local has to do with student welfare, freedom from bullying. So these two policies have verbiage in it that came as a result of the legislative session. However, the verbiage in those policies or the changes do not apply until the new school year, the 12-13 school year. So basically, if you've noticed in the explanatory notes, is that if once we get to the second reading and you adopt the policies in update 93, for those two policies, then the motion is to give a date, for example, at the beginning August, you know, so that at that point, TASB will switch out the policies in August. I guess the concern is if we adopt them now and they switch them out now, they're not in effect until the new school year. So that was why the recommendation is that, you know, when we can say, you know, get to the point where they need to be approved, and those two will be approved separately with a future date for implementation.
Does anybody have any problem with the first reading of update 93? Are there any questions? Any? Okay. Then I move to approve the first reading of update 93.
I'll second.
Tony?
Mrs. Cousins?
Yes.
Mr. Cardona?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Come on. He said yes.
Mrs. Rose?
Yes. I was bullying him a little to get him to say that.
Thank you.
Okay, Tony, that takes us to B.
Item B, consider approval of contract for sanitary sewer infrastructure and service at Kenny Chill Middle School.
President, board members, audience. Steve's helped me with this. We have secured an agreement with the PSB to do the sewer line from Canyoteo Middle into Canyoteo to do away with our wastewater treatment. And this MOU is to start the process with the engineering and design phases, mainly the design phases, and it's just an agreement that they will begin that, and we will assist them in any way we can. Steve?
The form is fine. I got it from Dr. Murphy when we reviewed it. I just want to make sure that we're clear on the responsibilities for the school district. We are paying for the engineering design and for the actual construction costs for the lift station and the force main.
Right.
That is, it's my understanding, consistent with the discussions we've had with El Paso Water Utilities in the past. So the form is fine. The water utility will handle all the bidding and actual award of the project, so there won't be any administrative involvement by us on that.
So do we need to, I don't see any action on this. Do we need to do anything? Okay.
I'd like to make them, I'm sorry, were you going to ask something, Cedric?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to make the motion to approve the contract for sanitary sewer infrastructure and service at Canyoteo Middle School.
I'll second that.
Okay. Tony?
Mrs. Gossens?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searle?
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Murphy. And Mr. Blanco, that takes us to...
Item C, consider approval of amendments to interlocal agreement with EPCC regarding Northwest Early College High School.
President Searle, members of the board, Dr. Murphy. This has been actually a pretty long time coming for us to finalize the agreement. Initially, EPCC had sent over to us a draft of a complete rewrite of the interlocal. Dr. Murphy and Principal Savina's help, we went through it, made some changes, some additions and deletions, and we sent it back, I think probably three times, between us and El Paso Community College. 2 weeks ago, they made a determination internally by the college that they didn't want to do a brand new interlocal. What they wanted to do was amend the existing agreement. We already have an agreement in place. For whatever administrative purposes, they asked us if we would agree to just amend that document, and we said yes. It required us to go through and make sure that the proposed amendments that they had provided to us covered each of the items that we included in our rewrites of the initial draft of the new agreement. We've done that. We had a couple of points where they had not included changes that we wanted. One of them dealt with the idea that a permanent structure may be built out there ultimately. We've included that back in the amendments. The amendments that are presented to you in the packet are what we want and what we're asking you to approve. We ask that you approve it contingent on El Paso Community College accepting the amendments as we've drafted them. I am 95% certain that they will, because they include everything that they wanted. The only additional item that we included was a statement regarding the use of a permanent infrastructure out there as opposed to portable buildings. So from our viewpoint, it's ready to go. The motion would need to be that you approve it contingent on El Paso Community College accepting the amendments and conditions that we asked for.
Can I ask, just real quick, doing leadership TASB, I've been able to travel a lot within the different early college high schools, especially in the Valley, and a lot of them carry the same name. I don't know if you all are open, but like Mission, I don't know if it's Mission or McAllen. It's like they have their high school and then it's McAllen Early High School. And so instead of the Natchez, it would be like your early college. And I think that would be kind of neat.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm. So
I think that would be beyond appropriate. Mm-hmm.
I've not talked about the name with them at all.
So if you could go back to that?
No,
sure,
no.
If you all want us to, we can go back to them. And
well,
is there a time-sensitive
Yes, it is time sensitive. I've already heard. Please understand, board, the whole county is going through this. Attorneys are at the dais of every district that has one, and pushing. It's not only EPCC, it's the state of Texas that's governing this as well.
But we could put it with option to change the name or something. How can we avoid that?
If you will make the motion to authorize us to finalize the amendments as presented, assuming the community college agrees with what we want, and if it will change the name, we'll ask them to do so. But if they say no, we'd like to finalize the agreement, is my understanding.
Would we want to get student input in that? And,
no.
I'll second the motion.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. So the motion was to contingent upon EPCC's agreement to what you've written.
Right, and an option for them to change the name, but if they say no.
And even if they say no, then you sign
the agreement.
The agreement, but then work
we'll
on them.
That. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Later for the name change.
Yeah, that, but that we would like to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tony?
Mrs. Casas?
Yes.
Mr. Cuadrado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
Mrs.
Strauss?
Yes.
I would like to point out to this board that we have a birthday here after this painful evening of Steve Blanco.
Whoa. We're going to have to make it more painful. He gets a weapon.
It is my birthday. Thank you very much.
Can we sing to you?
Sure.
Okay. Rachel, you got the
beautiful.
In Spanish.
Yeah, come on. Feliz cumpleaños.
Ready?
We're joining in. You just started. Okay. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Steve. Happy birthday to you and many more. Yeah.
Thanks.
And happy belated birthday to Dr. Murphy.
Yeah. And Patsy.
And Patsy. And Patsy.
We're all Aries.
When was your?
How did we have all these birthdays?
That's the 12th.
Mine's the 15th. That's Thursday, right? That's
happy birthday,
Beth. Your tax day? Happy birthday. I think, yeah.
Back in the 20th.
Can we sing the mañanitas?
Great.
Can we sing the mañanitas?
Maybe.
Start me off. No.
I know Salito Lindo. I can sing that.
Okay,
that brings us, Tony, to executive session.
Yes, and the time is now 9:27 p.m. and the meeting is to be closed under Texas Government Code Sections 551071, 551072, and 551074 for discussion regarding the potential sale and acquisition of real estate, review of current status of superintendent summative evaluation, and discussion of permanent administrative district vacancies.
Thank you, Tony.
I'm going to